finally some disco music. We put in a request for it, and they said it'll take 6 to 8 weeks, and it finally arrived.
I believe the subliminal message here from Elif is staying alive. The Cubs are staying alive.
Oh, is that what
is that
we're
right?
shooting for? If that's what we're shooting for, yeah.
Yeah. See?
Yeah.
We connected there, Elif. I just want to say, fee, fi, fo, fum, I smell the blood of an Englishman.
You know, either team, we had a chance to play either the San Francisco Giants, who we will be playing as of tomorrow night, or the New York Mets, and I kept vacillating back and forth, saying to myself, uh-oh, the Mets, that's a tough team right there. That's the team that knocked us out in 4 games last year. I don't think I want to face the Mets. And then I'd look at the Giants lineup or their pitching staff, and I go, no, you know what? These are the guys I don't want to play against.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Are you happy with the decision?
I wanted it to be the Giants. Like, all through the game, I kept thinking, I think I want it to be the Giants. And then when it was over, like, the second it ended, I went, nah, the Mets would have been the better move.
You don't want it to be anyone.
Right. Right.
You just want it to be over.
Well, you know what happens is, at this stage of the game, we're down to 8 teams. There's 4 teams left in the National League, and there's 4 teams left in the American League, and there's no slouches. Like, usually there's one team that somehow got in
slipped by
a fluke, and you go, oh, it'd be nice to play them. I hope we play them. But not this year. Every team, all the other 7 teams, are all very strong opponents. There's not a weak link in there.
That's how it should be, though. All the good ones get to the end.
Yeah. Now, can I share with you two little stats that are disturbing? Number one, and this is the one that everybody knows, and that's that the Giants, for the last several years, have won in the even numbered years. They won the World Series in 2010, 2012, 2014. So this is a disturbing pattern, you know. The other one is that the best team in baseball, of all your major sports, baseball is the one where the best team record-wise, and that would be the Cubs, who won 103 games, the best team only wins the World Series 19% of the time. That's less than 1 out of 5 times.
I'm working with the Rain Man, and it's raining.
Also, Qantas never crashes. So there's all kinds of stats that you can write out.
Look at that.
I know, because there's plenty of other stats that are on our side. Like, no other team has ever gone 109 years without winning a World Series. That's the one I'm dwelling on. That's the one I keep saying. How about that one? That's a good one. But the fact that to be the best team in baseball, which they were, not even close, at this stage doesn't mean as much as it should or could. You know, I'm not trying to be a doomsayer, because I'm pulling for the Cubs like crazy. And I was listening to Steve's show. A lot of people do this thing where they go, Cubs in 3, Cubs in 4, Cubs in 5. I can't do that, because there's so many factors you can't even think about.
Here's what I'm worried about. The cover of Sports Illustrated.
Yes, that's a curse. That's a curse.
That, it's no Billy Goat. It's the Sports Illustrated curse.
I know.
That scares me. But they have to do that.
I know.
Why couldn't they have waited?
It's like winning the Academy Award for Best Actor and Actress. If you look at the stats on what those actors or actresses tend to do after they win the Academy Award for Best Actor or Actress, as Cuba Gooding Jr. would tell you in great lengths, they never really achieve as good of a career as they could once they win it. So I know I'm not the first person to say this. There's a Sports Illustrated curse that says once you're on the cover, things don't always go your way. But it's still an honor to be on there, but you'd rather win the World Series.
It's not an honor if you don't win.
Right.
That allegedly is an urban legend, too.
About the Sports Illustrated?
Yeah.
You can make the argument either way, and I don't have the stats in front of me, but there have been plenty of athletes and plenty of teams over the years that once they're on the cover of there, they just kind of fizzle a little bit.
I can give you the top 10 cases of the Sports Illustrated cover.
What are
drinks.
Some? Give me some.
All right. I won't know any
I'm
of
trying
these,
to remember when I was a kid. I want to say his name was Pruitt, and I can't remember if it's Greg Pruitt or Mike Pruitt. There was some football player that won the Heisman Trophy, and everybody said, this guy is going to be the next great football player. This guy has every kind of skill you'd ever need in the world, and he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and then he was like one of the biggest busts in football.
That's just coincidental.
I guess. Well, you know what? I don't guess. It is coincidental. Being on the cover of a magazine would ruin your career. But there's been a lot of those coincidences.
Yeah, and Nelson Cruz.
Nelson Cruz is a baseball player.
Ring a bell?
Yeah.
He helped the Texas Rangers cruise all the way to within one out of the World Championship. Then the curse intervened.
Yeah.
Nelson Cruz graced the front of SI for one of its World Series issues, but the biggest issue the right fielder had was botching a fly ball and ending up the wrong side of baseball history.
Yeah. All right. But again, can you blame a magazine for that?
Tom Brady.
He missed... 2008. Tom Brady doesn't apply, because if you look at body of work for Tom Brady, he'll go down as one of the best football quarterbacks of all time. And I guess I didn't have to say the word football. I think quarterback would have probably... Let's just go with quarterback next time.
Well, in 2008, September, the quarterback was the cover boy of the NFL season preview.
Yeah.
In an ironic photo that showed Brady stretching with the knee on his skin exposed... And much more of his knee was exposed in week one when he tore his ACL and MCL against the Chiefs. That's kind of weird.
It's weird, but again, strictly a coincidence. No, time wasn't all, nothing changed because he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated. It just happened that way.
November 17th, 2003, in the year of our Lord, Kansas City Chiefs. Any of these ringing a bell before I give you the story?
I'm trying to remember what happened with the Chiefs. Did they have a really good start and then fade?
They were marching toward the playoffs and home field advantage before they got the SI cover treatment. Starting 9-0, Kansas City was the most talked about team in the NFL.
What year was this?
2003.
Okay.
But after quarterback Trent Green graced the front of the magazine, the team went 4-3, missed out on hosting playoffs, and lost to the Indianapolis Colts in the first round of the postseason.
All right, that's bad.
Michael Spinks?
He's a boxer. That's Leon Spinks' younger brother.
4 years after the ominous headline here, the magazine gave boxer Michael Spinks the cover treatment leading up to his heavyweight bout against Mike Tyson.
Yeah.
The words on the cover next to Spinks, "Don't count me out."
Oh.
Anyone counting to 91 could watch the entire fight because that's how many seconds it took for Tyson to knock Spinks out.
Oh.
I remember that fight.
That was a quick fight. All right.
And yes, Jack Lambert... July 30th, 1984, linebacker Jack Lambert of the Steelers appeared on the cover, along with the headline, "The Man of Steel." That season, the Man of Steel was plagued by turf toe injury, which led him to retire in 1985.
Oh,
Turf toe. Do you ever get tennis elbow?
You know, I've only had it one time in all the years I've played, so, but, you know, freak things happen.
Turf toe is the funniest thing.
Not if you have it.
Is it from
pretty painful,
the ball?
Actually.
Have you had
it,
Ryan?
Yeah, no, it's a sprain at the bottom of your foot. You know where the ball of your foot, where that joint is? So
yeah.
When you take that step, that's where it hurts right
Ooh.
There. It's not fun. It's kind of a, it's like hitting your funny bone. You know, everyone thinks it sounds so quirky and cute, but it really is kind of painful.
As you know, I'm a huge cartoon fan, so I've had Smurf toe a couple of times.
Yeah,
and
sure.
That's... It just turns blue down there. It's awful.
Down where?
Down in your foot region.
Okay, thanks for specifying.
That's what I meant to say.
More of these Sports Illustrated curses when we come back. 312-981-7200. I like doing the fee-fi-fo-fum. Uh-huh. I smell the blood of...
Well, the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah. All right, we'll take a quick break and then more of that. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. We're talking about the Cubs. You know, they are odds-on favorite and have been all season long. Odds-on favorite to win the World Series. I never thought I'd see that in my lifetime. Last year, they were odds-on favorite to win the World Series after they beat the Cardinals in round one of the playoffs. But never all season long have the Cubs been the favorite, Las Vegas favorite, to be the World Series winners.
And when were they the favorite? Like after their first game or something?
Before the season started. And then, if you'll all remember, Kyle Schwarber injured himself in that first week. And everybody who loves the Cubs just gasped and said, is this going to be a cursed year? This is no way to start the season with one of our biggest hoped players going down like this. But they stumbled. They had a 2-week period right before the All-Star game where they were not good, but the rest of the season they've just been amazing.
And the White Sox conversely started out really strong and then
kind of fizzled.
What happened?
I know.
We were talking about the Cubs players being on the cover of Sports Illustrated and the curse that has really predicted failure in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
And the last most famous one, not year-wise, but the last one on our list, August 7th, 1978, Pete Rose.
Oh, yeah.
Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hit streak is a baseball record many think will never be broken. Sports Illustrated helped the Yankee Clippers mark Stay Safe in 1978. That summer, Pete Rose, in the midst of a 44-game hitting streak, appeared on the magazine's cover. The week it hit newsstands, Rose's streak ended.
Oh, no.
This is from New York Daily News.
630 texts, were the Giants on the cover of Sports Illustrated on any of the 3 years that they won? I seem to remember them being on the cover after one of their wins, but I don't remember them being put on the cover prior to. But I want to say like a week or two after they won the World Series. I can't remember if it was the first time or the second time, but I do seem to, in my head, remember them being on the cover at some point, I think. Somebody also asked that we please stop talking about this because it's making them have heart failure. I can't tell you how many people I've talked to in the last couple of weeks, including one of the guys I played tennis with last night who's been a Cubs fan his whole life, who said, I can't watch because I don't want to be disappointed again.
You can't not watch. I mean, listen, it's beyond your control.
Right.
You watch. There is no curse, people.
Right.
Even the Sports Illustrated. I know that the Sports Illustrated cover declares them the 2016 World Series champions, which I wouldn't have done.
Not yet. Not yet.
I would just say, great team.
Well, that's why, like, everybody, including Steve Cochran earlier this morning, as they played a Cubs parody song, said, this is too early for us to be enjoying this sort of thing. Although, if you'll remember back to the Bears Super Bowl shuffle, they recorded that, I think, the third or fourth week into the season, and they ended up doing really well, you know? So there's a weird balance on stuff like that.
There is no balance. There is no curse. Although, if you believe in the curse, I would like to tell you something.
What?
And I'm not saying this to gloat or anything.
But?
Or, well, speaking of gloat, let's go goat. Today marks an important day in the history of the Chicago Cubs.
What's the day? Is this the day that they wouldn't let the goat in from the Billy Goat?
Yep, it was on this day, October 6, 1945, that the owner of the Billy Goat Tavern bought a ticket for his goat at Wrigley Field for Game 4 of the World Series. He was later escorted out of Wrigley after nearby fans complained about the smell of Murphy the Goat. That's just rude. I'm sure there are fans
that
smell
worse.
Yes.
There are. I'm sure there are.
Sienis became outraged, and once outside Wrigley, he supposedly put a curse on the Cubs, saying they would never win another World Series game at Wrigley. Today, on this date, October 6, 1945.
Day. All right. I told you part of this the other day, but now I'll tell you the rest of it. On Monday, as I was leaving for work, my neighbor across the street and down one house, Chuck, came running over and said, did you see the story in the Tribune about my dad? And it turns out his dad was the Andy Frayn usher. His dad, Olaf, was the Andy Frayn usher that wouldn't let Sam Sienis and the goat into Wrigley Field. Now, Chuck told me that as a boy, his dad used to tell him the story, but for some reason, he envisioned a wall of Andy Frayn ushers, like 35 or 40 guys, blocking the entrance to Wrigley, not letting this guy, Sam Sienis, or his goat into Wrigley Field.
First of all, Sam is tiny. He's not much bigger than the goat.
Right.
So what do they need a whole wall of Andy Frayn ushers?
Sam would ride the goat like a racehorse around the city and got from the Billy Goat to Wrigley Field in 3.5 minutes, which is a world record, Wendy.
No traffic.
There's no traffic. Back then, right. Although they used to have goat lanes on Lakeshore Drive. Those have since been abolished. But back then in the 1940s, there was the regular car lane, and then you had a goat lane. So he said that his whole life, first of all, like we mentioned yesterday, the day before, whenever your dad tells you something, you kind of go, oh, all right.
Fabricated.
Sure. I'm sure that happened. I'm sure you're the guy that started the Cubs curse. Except that Rick Hogan did a story in the Trib on Sunday about the curse and showed a picture of the entrance of Wrigley Field and my friend Chuck's father, Olaf, being the guy, the one Andy Frayn. He's got this look on his face like, we don't allow that in here. No goats in Wrigley Field. So I said to him, come on, you want to come on the story and tell the show, tell the world about your story
on
the show?
Come on the show and tell the story.
Yeah, and I said it in reverse order to try to confuse. I was using a Jedi mind trick to try to convince him to come on.
Didn't catch me. I'm hip to the Jedi mind trick.
You know that. You know how that works. So he said, no. He goes, for me, the weird part of this was seeing my dad in the paper, because everybody in his family was calling each other going, hey, your dad's in the paper. Did you see your dad in the Tribune? Never named before. Like, that picture has circulated, but it never said the man, his father, who was the guy who said to the Billy Goat guy, no, you can't come in.
Is he still with us?
No. He died a couple years ago.
Well, that was 71 years ago today.
How about that?
Today. So be thankful the Cubs aren't playing today.
Yeah,
because that would
so.
Be weird.
Although, if they play today and win today, then you say, well, goodbye to that curse. That curse is by the books. We've beaten that one.
All right. And I have an idea for Coach Madden. Perhaps he should do something to break the curse once and for all.
What is that?
All the Cubs, and it's a little late because when's their first game? Tomorrow?
Tomorrow night, 8:30.
They should have all grown
goatees. Yeah, maybe.
That would hex the curse.
Right.
You're kind of supporting the goat, but yet you're going against the goat. Goatees would have been the way to go. Why didn't he do that?
I don't think Anthony Rizzo can.
There's a couple guys on the Cubs that are too young.
Look at the
Addison Russell has never shaved, I don't think.
Are you kidding?
He's a very young. They're very. Some of the Cubs are very young.
I have a 16-year-old that could grow like a little bit of a goatee. Mainly sideburns on him.
Oh.
But you could get a fake one.
Yeah.
They should have grown goatees.
Except a fake one. What sort of a message does that send to their opponent?
But the playoffs haven't started yet, so they can't really start growing it until game one, right?
How would that
and when
work?
Do the Hawks, when do the
I
Hawks
don't
start
have all the
growing?
Logistics
they,
figured out.
They start growing at game one, right? That's when the Hawks start growing theirs?
I think there's some that get a little bit of a jump, Ryan. I think there's some who realize,
cheers.
I can't
well,
get
some,
this done
yeah.
quickly, so I better start a few weeks early.
And poor Jonathan Toews can't really.
It's hard for. He's one of the guys that has a harder time.
Babyface.
Yeah.
But I think that's a good idea. How do we get a hold of the Cubs organization?
Oh, they're easy to reach. They're answering their own phones. Just give them a call. They'll
I
be
think
there.
It's a great idea. You break the curse by wearing all the players have goatees. He's into that, where they all do fun things together.
Right.
I believe the Boston Red Sox did grow beards in the
this
playoffs.
This isn't a beard.
One time.
This is a goatee. Do you see where I'm going
you
with this?
You see it, Ryan. Don't
yeah.
burst Wendy's
hey,
dream.
You know what? Explain it one more time.
One
How
more
does
time
this work?
For
yeah.
Ryan.
Because
Wait,
of
no,
the...
yeah, no, he's kidding.
Oh.
He's messing
I thought,
with you.
I thought somebody actually
no,
liked
he's
my
messing
idea.
With you. He's messing with you.
Damn.
All right, let's take a quick break, and then Ryan has the news, and then there will be more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Music from your favorite eras. This is WGN, the Bill and Wendy Show. You just caught yourself. You're now saying something.
I got a problem.
That makes you sound a lot older than you are.
You know, I don't typically speak like... an old woman.
Nope. I was.
I really
would
don't.
Agree with you. I don't think you do at all.
Unless an old woman swears a lot.
Some do.
I'm trying to curb that a little bit.
Are you
too.
Really? Good for you.
Well, I mean, I don't swear in inappropriate situations.
Right.
With you, I tend to trust you and think, oh, he's not going to come on the air and bust me.
No, I would never do that.
Jimmy DeCastro swears on the air. So
yeah, that's true.
How about that?
See, it makes me proud. Do you think less of him because he swears?
No. Does it really matter at this point?
I guess.
No.
All right. I've been saying this stupid catchphrase for the last few days. And
23 Skidoo.
That would have been worse, I think.
That one still throws me. I know there was a time. There was a time in American culture where if people were excited by something, they would say 23 Skidoo. What? Why? Has anything ever happened to you where you said to yourself, "I think the best way to sum this up is by saying 23 Skidoo"?
It generally refers to leaving quickly, being forced to leave quickly by someone else, or taking advantage of. An opportunity to leave.
Okay, I've been in those situations, but never did it cross my mind where I went, I got to get out of here, and I'm going to say 23 Skidoo just to prove my point.
Why 23?
I don't know.
Is that why Michael Jordan chose that number?
Yes. Wouldn't it have been funnier if his last name was Skidoo? Because then it would have said that on the back of his jersey.
All right,
who's
well,
your favorite player? I like that 23 Skidoo guy.
It's not that bad. But I almost said it to Elif this morning. I've been saying it to people, like if I go purchase something and they give me my change or whatever,
sure.
I've been going, thanks, my dear. I don't know why. I've done it for the last 3 days, and I almost said it to Elif. I have to nip that in the bud right now.
How did that start?
I don't
what
know.
Was, like the very first time you said it, did you hear somebody else say
I,
it?
I don't know. The only thing I can think of is I've been binge watching that 11/22/63 with my sons.
Yeah.
It's awesome, by the
yeah,
way.
Yeah, it's great.
James Franco is really a great actor. He really is.
Can be pretty good.
He's come a long way from Freaks and Geeks.
Yeah, agreed.
And that's kind of old time in the 60s at some point. Was there someone who said that maybe? Because I don't know where I never said that before in my life.
I'm sure I get the same impression of it that you get. You think of a much older woman saying it. And I don't know that you even come close to qualifying to somebody that would normally say that.
No.
Dearie would be more problematic if you said, thanks, dearie.
And like a witch, thank you, my dearie.
Yeah. That would mean that you've turned a corner. But even just my dear, I don't understand how you came up with that.
And I think the first time it surfaced when I was in the WGN cafeteria and I purchased a Diet Coke.
Yeah.
And I never have cash on me, and it was $2 even. So yeah. I handed it to her, and I said, thanks, my dear.
How did she react to that?
She said, no problem, and she smiled. I see her all the time. And then I got my hair colored last night, and thanks, my dear.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why am I saying this?
That's an epidemic if you said it that often.
And then moments ago, Elif handed us some information, and I went, thanks, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I stopped myself.
You've
so right now, I'm done.
I've noticed that here in the studio, you've put out a bowl of hard candies. I'm not used to seeing that from you.
And really, who likes the root beer barrels? My grandfather always had these coffee candies.
What are those?
It was like kind of like a Werther's, but it was a coffee candy.
Oh, I do know those.
And it tasted like coffee with a... Ugh. I almost just swore.
You go ahead. The precedent has been set. You can say whatever you want now.
With a... S-ton, I almost said.
Yeah.
It tasted like a coffee candy with a ton of creamer and sugar in it. So it was kind of light-colored, you put cream and sugar in coffee. It gets milky-looking. That was what these coffee candies were. And he quit smoking in his 80s and turned to these coffee candies. So, you know, you hang out with your grandpa. He says, do you want some candy? You say, sure.
Sure.
And you don't really like it because you don't like coffee as a little kid, but then you learn to like it.
Oh, I guess.
It's like candy or no candy. What kind of candy is it? Coffee candy? Sure, I'll try it. And this is bitter and bad. But you keep taking them, and then eventually you like coffee with tons of cream and sugar in it.
Was that his goal, was to make you no? That's just the kind of candy
that's
he preferred.
What he had.
My grandmother alternated between two types of candies. Number one were those slices. It looks like a slice of orange or lemon.
Gelatinous with sugar on
it? Yeah. She would always have those.
Did you like those?
No. And then the other ones, I think, were made by Brock's. I'm not sure. They were small circles, and then they had like a picture of a fruit on them to tell you what kind, it was a raspberry or a pear.
I think I remember.
So it's kind of their way of saying this is going to taste like a pear.
This is what you're about to eat.
You're about to eat a pear or a raspberry. It was a very small circle, not a lot of flavor in them, but she would alternate between those two. And she would always say to us, is there a kind of candy that you would prefer? And then my brother and I had a list of like 150 candies. We would just rattle off a list. It took the rest of our visit. And then the next time again, she'd go back to either the slices or the little circles again.
She forgot.
Yeah, I guess.
And my grandfather also alternated with the bright, it was kind of like a blood red wrapped anise candy.
Oh, yeah. I know those two.
So it just tasted, then I liked Ouzo after doing that. So I don't know why he did that. I guess, I don't know. All right. The Madeira stuff, I got to stop. It's been this week I've been using it.
At least you know. I mean, nobody's come up to you. You figured it out on your own.
I heard myself say it and I go, what am I doing? Michael, what does Madeira mean?
Well, the original term Madeira comes from, it's actually an old black term when speaking to your mother, and it stood for mother dear. It's like, yes, mother dear, you know, I'll do that or something. And it got shortened to Madeira. It said, yes, Madeira. But now sometimes people use it in place of my dear instead of mother dear.
See, that's what I thought it would be, and you did too, because this wasn't your mother who served you at the cafeteria.
No, now they really think I'm weird.
Or they think they finally found their mom, their real mom. My real mom came into the cafeteria.
No, because I'm calling them mom.
Oh, yeah, that's even weirder then.
All right, well, Michael, thank you for the origin of that. Do you know where 23 Skidoo came from?
That I do not, no.
All right. Well, thank you anyway. We appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. All right, now that I know what it means,
are you still going
to
say it?
No, I don't want to say it. I'm trying to break the habit, so now I'll just think, I'm going to be calling Elif mother dear. That's stupid.
That's crazy.
What if I run into Mother Goose? Do I call her Magoose?
Magoose. Oh, Magoose, you've done it again. Say that to somebody and see what kind of response
sure.
you get.
Hi, Rosemary.
Hello.
What's
Hello.
Up, Rosemary?
Hello, my dear.
Hello. I was just wondering how the word candidate turned into candidate, and everybody saying it. I think you have to be as old as I am to even remember that it's candidate, not candidate.
Are people saying candidate now?
It goes either way.
Yeah.
I have heard candidate more frequently, I think. Yes. I say candidate.
I say candidate. You must be over 50. I'm sorry to say that.
Way over.
Rosemary, we've got a bad connection. I'm going to have to let you go.
Okay.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah,
this is the first time I've been able to say it publicly. I say it to all my friends. I think it's because everybody's watching all these British comedies and British things on PBS.
Maybe.
And they all say candidate and often. Everybody's saying often now.
Oh.
I don't say that. Do you say that, Bill?
No.
Often.
I still say often. Yeah.
Do you say...
Okay, keep it up. Keep up the good work.
We're trying.
Well,
we're trying.
Thank you, Rosemary. Thanks for calling me out, too.
Okay. Thanks for hearing me out.
Have a great day.
Can I tell you one that I think... There are two words that come to mind immediately that I think separate slightly older people from slightly younger people. Let's take a quick break, and then I'll tell you. Tell me if you agree with me or not. And if you have some, 312-981-7200, we'll get that done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. If you're just joining us, the year is 1947.
Say, I liked that year.
Wendy has taken to using the phrase Madeer when addressing a woman who does or says anything near her.
Yeah, it's just been this week, and I have to nip this problem in the bud before
sure.
it continues, because I do not want to be that woman.
No, I can't say that I blame you. Now, there are a couple of words that I noticed are the divide between what we would normally think of as older people and then younger people. Can I share a couple of them with you?
Yes.
All right. The first one is, I've noticed that older people tend to refer to robots as robots. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah.
I know a couple of older people, and maybe when robots first came out, they were said it was said really, really fast. But
robots?
Robots, yeah. Yep.
Yeah, not the bot.
Right. The wrong part of the word is
yeah.
stressed. Aeroplane as opposed to airplane. And again, somebody told me once that when those were really hitting their stride, all of America referred to them as aeroplanes. I don't know if that's true or not, because I was busy not being born for another 35 or 40 years.
I haven't heard anybody use that
aeroplane.
By mistake.
And then the other one is older people will call it porno and younger people will just say porn. But older people will go,
you've just ruined it.
I saw them in pornos. And you go, pornos? You mean porn?
I say porno.
Do you say, really, do you?
Yeah, because that's when I was introduced to it, when it was still called pornos.
Have you ever seen pornos that feature both robots and aeroplanes?
I would like to.
That would be a great market.
Isn't that Westworld? Isn't that kind of
yes.
what you're watching?
Yes, it is.
And why you're watching
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I have another word for you that I think is an older individual who would say.
What?
Program.
Oh, I say that.
Instead of program.
I say that just to be ironic.
Right. But, I mean, you say it and you're aware of the fact
yeah.
that you're saying it. But
and outfits, too. But I say that because I know it bugs you. Because it's fun. But that's the only reason I say it. Normally, if I'm not around you, I would not say robots or programs or aeroplanes or any of that.
Why don't you work on your outfits if you're so into saying that and bugging me?
Nah.
Hi, Yvonne.
Hi, Bill and Wendy.
What's up?
How are you, my dear?
Well, yeah, have some Madeira, my dear. There was a song, a comedian back in the 60s. Back in the days of Andy Griffith used to do something like Lydia, Lydia, the Encyclopedia.
Well, that was Groucho Marx
Lydia
who sang
the
that.
The Tattooed Lady.
That was okay. Groucho Marx.
There was Groucho Marx.
Yeah.
Somebody else back during that time had a song, Have Some Madeira, Madeira, and things become less clear, and I don't know what the rest of the song is.
And that was somewhere in the 60s, you're saying?
I believe so.
All right. I'm finding it now. I have it on Google, so I'm not familiar with it. It was... There it is.
She was young, she was pure, she was new, she was nice, she was fair, she was sweet, 17.
Ew.
He was old, he was vile, no stranger to vice, he was bad, He was Bates. He was mean.
The Limelighters.
He and bagel her up to his flat to view his collection of stamps, all unperforated. And he said, as he hastened to put out the cat, the wine, his cigar, and the lamps.
Dirty old man.
Yeah, I think so.
Have some, my dear, my dear. You really have nothing to fear.
Right. Look at you. Is this the song you're talking about, Yvonne?
Yes, it is. It's... And I don't know why I would be a kid and listening to that, but.
Well, because as a kid, and I'm telling you, I would have heard it and I would have laughed, whatever. And now that we're hearing these lyrics and really listening to them.
A little creepy.
It's totally creepy.
Right.
But it is.
It's the Limelighters. Have some Madeira, my dear.
Okay, that's what I thought of when I heard Madeira.
Well, thank you. Thank you for calling.
All righty. Have a good one.
You too.
As well.
Remember that song Ringo Starr used to sing, "You're 16, you're beautiful, you're mine."
And you're mine.
Like when I was a kid, I liked that song. But then I heard Ringo Starr sing it a couple years ago when he was 70, and I went, oh, don't sing that anymore.
Mellow Yellow by Donovan, which my son Michael covers. I didn't really realize what the lyrics were until he says, "I'm just mad about 14.
Yeah, that's uncomfortable.
And I'm
though.
Like, Michael, you got to change that
right.
because that's the song.
Yeah.
But then it all of a sudden was different in my ears.
Right, I get it.
Tom, you have a question, don't you?
Well, no. The past tense of hang is hung, not hang.
Not for people.
Everybody needs to hang.
Not when it's a hanging, like when it's a person being...
No, when it's a lynching, they were hung by the neck until death.
But they
didn't hang by the neck. They were hung. It's hung.
Wait, how did that come up? Did we mention? Did
no,
was that...
we're talking about words.
Oh,
and
oh,
just
okay.
Everybody is oh, right. chiming in.
I
with
thought
some
I missed
stuff.
A part of the show about lynching. So I'm like, wait,
no,
I was here the whole show.
You hanged up your coat. You hung up your coat.
See, I always question that, too. But in, like, the news broadcaster's handbook, I almost said,
mm-hmm.
the past tense of some of a hanging is hanged. That's how.
No,
that's how.
The,
and it always sounds wrong when you
does.
Hear them say it. You go, "Oh, that's not the way to say that." But maybe
for
it is.
For news reporting, I'm telling you, because it sounds totally wrong for me. But like you, like lay down, you lay something down or
lie down
on a bed. It's the same kind of thing. Like if you hang a picture, it's hung.
We always get a ton of calls up here in the newsroom about pleaded versus pled.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
For being guilty or innocent?
Yeah.
But now coming from
not
the
your
newsroom.
Pants.
Talk to Tom. The past tense of a person being
yeah, that one
hanged.
Hasn't really come up, and I'm reading it right now. The regular past tense of hang is hung, which would be used in all of the examples. I'm going through it right now. I'm trying to make
right.
sense of it.
Because if somebody says Mr. Paulson was hung, you go, well, good for Mr. Paulson.
But there's
I would
a
call
hung
Mr.
jury.
Paulson.
There is a hung jury. There's no such thing as a hanged jury.
I would
jury.
Call Mr. Paulson
sure.
to have some Madeira, my
sure.
dear.
Have lunch with the guy.
Tom, thank you very much for calling. We'll get to the bottom of it sometime this year.
All right, thanks.
All right.
All right.
I don't want to put pressure on ourselves.
No, there's no pressure. All right, let's take a quick break. If you can stay on hold, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. A lot of strange stuff going through the show today. That's fine. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.
Words in papers, words in books, words on TV, words for books, words of comfort, words of peace, words to make the fighting cease, words to tell you what
it's
to
Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. This discussion started because Wendy noticed herself that she is using a phrase that I think you said made you sound old.
And I'm not just saying old. I'm talking like that woman in that masterpiece picture with the big butt in the hoop skirt
in Sunday, dress. Sunday in the Park with George, that woman?
That's what it's really called. I call it Lady with the
right,
Butt.
Lady with the
Pre-Kardashian
butt.
Is what I call it.
Right.
I just felt old, and I said Madeira to a couple of people who I've thought about it now. They're younger than I am.
Right.
Like, by far, it's weird and stupid, and I guess it's a derivative of Mother Dear. It was shortened.
But it sound like, to the casual listener, it would be like a quick My Dear.
But why would I even be saying
why would you
that
say
to
that?
Anyone?
But I did see you catch yourself as Elif came in to give you something. Elif is filling in for Kevin this week while he's still on his honeymoon, and you caught yourself just before you said it.
Yeah, and it's bothersome to me, and I am here to purge it out of my system. Bill, what do you know about Madeir?
Yeah, you know, Tyler Perry's in town, and they've been interviewing him on the radio and TV all week because he's doing that Madeir character. So I think in your subconscious, Wendy, by the way, you're doing a good job. I think
with my subconscious? Thank you, Bill.
Yeah, it's actually Steve. I lied and said my name was Bill. But
why?
It's a trend now, Wendy. People do that now.
They never put me through if I tell them it's Steve. Oh, so I
can see why.
They always think it's Bertrand.
All right, so Steve, I don't watch Tyler Perry stuff.
Neither do I, but they interviewed him, and I think someone from your station interviewed him, or it was like a taped interview.
I think Dean Richards did.
I think, yeah, that might be it. He's playing at the Erie Crown Theater, I think, but yeah. He's from Chicago originally, and he's doing the Madea show, so I think that seeped into your subconscious.
Subliminal.
Thank you, Steve. Elif, don't put Steve through again, okay?
Oh, no.
Even if he goes by the name of Bill. I'm kidding. Thank you, Steve.
Just cracker on the speckle, Steve.
Thank you.
Wait, he's calling you Steve now?
No, my name's not Steve.
I don't get it. All right, some other words that I shouldn't be using. Annette, you use these words?
Yes, I do. And some people say, what decade are you from? I'm 55 today, actually.
Oh, happy birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. And I don't know if it's because I'm just channeling my mother, but sometimes I feel like I was born like 30 or 40 years after my time, because I tend to relate more to things in the 30s and 40s anyways.
Yeah.
But I annoy people. I was even told, I'm a postal clerk, I work up the front window, and I was told by two other clerks that when I was going to be filling in for one for vacation, mm-hmm. and there'll be no terms of endearment because I tend to say, oh, that's okay, sweetie, you have a good day.
Oh,
sweetie's like nice.
That. Yeah.
Sweetie's
yeah.
nice, but it harkens back to another time. You don't hear that every day.
Right.
Like there was a time where throughout a day you'd hear people say that all day long, and now it's mm-hmm. it's few and farther between.
Do you say it to a kid? Because I still use that. Hi, sweetie.
I use it. But I also, seniors, because I deal with a lot of seniors, mm-hmm. seniors do still, you know, I'm talking people 20, 30 years older than me, they do tend to use the post office more than the younger crowd. So we are getting the younger crowd for their eBay stuff, but.
Yeah, sure.
All right,
yeah.
So sweetie I get, and they probably like it, yeah. The little old ladies.
Try hot stuff and see what happens. I bet that would work.
Okay.
I bet that'll work.
The right. word gal is not in my vernacular. I don't like that. The crazy gals.
Yeah, we just do that. She's a really nice gal. Our moms and our, my aunts and aunties always use it. She's a really nice gal. But I did want to say about the coffee candy. That's the only way I started drinking coffee when I had to start working early mornings. I had to make it taste like that coffee candy.
Me too.
Otherwise, I couldn't. Yeah. So as long as it tastes like the coffee candy, I'm good because my aunt and uncle had one of those three-tiered candy dishes all the time at their house. And
with
that was
nothing good in it, you know? You got this beautiful display dish and crappy candy.
Put some
candy.
Good candy in there.
Licorice. Yeah. I like licorice, though, so I'm old school that way, too. So.
All right, well, tell you what, since it's your birthday, doll. Hey, doll.
Oh.
Hey, Madeir. Why don't we set you up with a Lou Malnati's gift certificate?
Oh, that's so sweet of you. You guys are the best. I love listening.
Well, we're happy that you called, and happy birthday to you.
Well, thank you.
Thanks,
thank
Annette.
You so much, Bill. And I love your references. I get them.
Oh, good.
You know,
yeah, that's because you're older than you really are.
Right.
All right, hang on, Annette. Lou Malnati's is home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnatis.com. One of my best friends, Brad, calls everybody doll. Hey, doll.
Women only. Right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Because you said everybody, because it'd be weird if
I
he
guess.
Just went up to a guy and
yeah,
called him doll.
But he says it like totally lovingly, and it's like, oh, so good to see you, doll. And it's like, what are we going to flatfoot flugy now?
All right, tell me this. My dad, in restaurant situations, will refer to the waitress as hun. And then I have said to him, that doesn't play anymore.
Not
that
anymore.
That hun thing does not work anymore. Come on. That's what waitresses want to be called.
Not
I don't know her name.
Not in 2016.
I don't think it's...
Unless her name is Honey.
A lot of times her name is Honey. A lot of times. But I think that's one that even though it was accepted for a time, I don't think this time it works anymore. I don't think.
All right. Well, we are running the gamut here of words. Peter's on the line. Hi, Peter. Is this your real name?
That is my real name, Wendy. And, Bill, you guys are part of our morning menu. You guys are beautiful.
Oh, that's nice of you. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
Okay. The word that I hear professionally on the professionally made commercials, and some of you guys when you do the live commercials,
yeah.
How do you say the word G-R-O-C-E-R-Y?
I say grocery.
So do I.
Yeah, grocery. Why? How are people saying it?
A lot of people say it wrong.
What are they saying?
I tell you, no, I've heard professionally made commercials, Bill. They say groceries.
That drives me nuts.
Yeah, and it's for, well, I'm not going to say, it's one of our sponsors that we use out there on your show, but he says it groceries, and that's just kind of, oops, you know.
Oh, all right, well.
And like jewelry. People say jewelry.
Yeah.
And you do.
I used to. I know. I've learned my lesson, but I used to.
And, Bill, talking about calling girls by different names or different notations, I always call waitresses or female acquaintances sweetheart. And that drives my wife nuts because I call her sweetheart all the time.
See, she gets jealous, Peter.
Well, you got to find a substitute that'll make your wife not upset with you.
Like you were saying, gal or hon or something like that. I've never used hon. That's always sweetheart.
Oh, I like that, Peter. I'll go grocery shopping with you anytime.
Okay. Well, meet you on LaGrange show.
Oh, that was fast.
All right, perfect. Thank you, Peter.
That didn't take long at all. Thanks, Peter.
How do you guys pronounce the second month of the year?
I say it wrong, and I'm born in that month.
February?
I say February.
I do, too. It's hard to drop that extra R in there.
It sounds pretentious.
I know it's there.
February.
But that one—that's a tough one because it's—I think more people say February than February, even though it's incorrect. Like we've discussed this one in the past, but sherbet. Most people in Chicago grew up saying sherbet, and then if you just say it the right way, sherbet, people stare at you and they go, "Oh, what's wrong with you? You can't say sherbet like the rest of us."
Not in February.
Not in February. I cannot say sherbet.
My husband just texted me something that his father is guilty of. So my father-in-law, it's not mustard that you put on a hamburger. What is the red condiment? What do you call it?
Well, it would be ketchup.
That's how I say it. He says catsup all the time.
Do you know one of the makers?
Del Monte.
It was Del Monte. Half the containers would say ketchup and half would say catsup. Do they still do that?
We looked that up because he still will say, "Do you have the catsup?" And I think he's being cute. But yeah. Del Monte catsup was what we used all along. My sister, I don't know why she got to choose which ketchup we used, but she chose Del Monte because it was sweeter than the other ones. And it was always catsup. And I always wondered, and now that I've lived on my own and away from my sister, it's Heinz all the way.
Yeah.
But ketchup, catsup.
Yeah, but I didn't know they still did that. I remember growing up, there were two of them in our grocery store. One was ketchup and catsup, and the other one was, I can't remember who made the frozen version of Welsh rarebit, but half the boxes said Welsh rarebit and half said Welsh rabbit.
I never saw the rabbit because I never would have bought it because I would have thought it was rabbit.
But I think they played into the hands of people who were saying it incorrectly. It's always been Welsh rarebit, but somehow when it translated over to America, a lot of Americans were calling it Welsh rabbit. So even though there's little to no rabbit in Welsh rarebit, they just felt we better cover all of our bases. I want to say it was Swanson, but I could be wrong. But I remember as a kid,
the frozen dinners.
Maybe it was Swanson.
Yeah, because I had a friend, Pam, who would put it, her grandma would make it for us and put it in a fondue pot. And it was really fun being a little kid.
Yeah.
And she'd cut toast in squares and we'd dip it. And we had it very frequently.
And then the queen would come over. Right? And that was a fun time when the queen would visit and you guys would have Welsh rarebit.
Catsup and ketchup is the same thing, by the way.
It is the exact same thing.
It's just, I guess, depending on where you were that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it's still out there, though. I will research that a little more.
All right. We have a little bit more of these and a bunch of people who want to jump in, and we invite you to. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, and we're talking words. This all came about because I called someone my dear, and I'm done. This is my last day.
You're not
going to
say
it
anymore after today.
You had mentioned Welsh rarebit, and Stouffer's was the original red container.
Stouffer's. I think I said Swanson, but I think it was Stouffer's.
And I never in my life saw it say rabbit on the box.
No.
Because I wouldn't have purchased it, but I found Campbell's Soup. A lot of times they have recipes in magazines, and they have an ad for
what they call golden rabbit, which is their version of Welsh rarebit.
Although it's just gravy. You're pouring gravy over toast. To me, that's not going to cut it.
Is that gravy or is that cheese? What is that?
It looks like gravy.
Is it?
You make it with, I guess you mix tomato and cheddar cheese soup.
Yeah.
And then golden rabbit is what they called it.
Yeah.
I would have never, ever, I had a bunny named Nosy. I wouldn't have eaten this.
No. Our neighbors would always say we're having Welsh rabbit. Well, not always, whenever. How often can you eat Welsh rabbit for lunch? But I'd always say, I think you mean rarebit, I think. But then I remember as a kid seeing it in Oak Foods, one of the grocery stores by us. And it was, the boxes were split right down the middle. Half of them said rarebit and half said rabbit.
That's a rare bit.
Yeah, it is.
Can I just tell you, weeknights, WGN-TV presents Cubs Nightly. It's a nightly show for everything Cubs for as long as they're in the baseball playoffs, which hopefully will be a long time.
Several weeks.
Watch Cubs Nightly, weeknights at 6.
People don't say that correctly anymore.
WGN-TV.
Yes.
So I'm not calling anyone Madeir. And Barbara, what is your bad word that someone might call you?
Well, I'm in my late 50s, but my 30-ish on, like you said, everybody said you sound old, you?
Yes.
Wendy?
Yes.
I always felt old when they'd say, ma'am.
That does make you.
I bet that's
a jolt. It is, isn't it?
I don't like that at all. I'd rather be called honey or baby or whatever.
Barbara, when somebody does call you ma'am, do you call them out on it and say, hey,
I'm not a ma'am yet.
Yeah, don't do that.
No, I don't call them out on it. I said, just call me anything, but don't call me Ray.
A little nod to Paul Simon. All right, good. All right.
Thank you, Barbara. We appreciate you calling on this rainy day.
All right. Have a good one.
You too. I do correct people. If I go purchase something and they go, thank you, ma'am, I'm like, come on, I'm not a ma'am.
Right, it's upsetting.
And then they go, sir?
Right. Yeah, that's better.
More like
go with that, punk.
Both my boys have long hair, and we went out to breakfast this past weekend, and the waitress looked at Jim and I sitting on one side of the table.
Uh-huh.
Jim and me, I guess in that case it would be, because looked at me.
Yeah.
And Dylan was sitting across from us. Michael was still home sleeping. And Dylan has long hair. And the waitress comes up and said, hello, young lady, or something like that.
Oh, no.
Oh, hello, and young ma'am or young miss. And Dylan just looked up at her. And right away, she goes, I am so sorry. I should be saying young man.
Yeah.
And I said, he goes, why is this happening? And I said, well, sometimes they're just seeing peripherally that it's long hair.
Sure.
They didn't really look at your face because he doesn't look like a girl.
No.
And then he goes, well, what do I do? And I said, well, next time you say, hi, young lady, you just go, thank you, sir. So he might use that next time.
Or a curtsy.
Yeah.
You just stand up and curtsy.
That could happen. All right. We have time for one more, Bill.
Whichever you prefer. They're all good. Oh, do Gene on 3, because I get this one. We were talking earlier about words that kind of separate older people from younger people. It's the same item or the same thing, but older people will call it one thing, younger another. And Gene, you know one of these, don't you?
Yes, I do. I'm a former teacher of 12-year-old students who will point out all your inconsistencies.
Of course.
To
well, congratulations on surviving that, Gene.
One of the things is one of their keynotes to whether a person is old is whether they say markers or magic markers.
All right. So the origin of that is back in the 70s, there was a company that produced, the brand name was Magic Marker, and they were one of the most popular. So we all just started calling them magic markers.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it was like an aluminum tube. And when you took the cap off, it kind of squeaked a little bit.
Yeah,
and the smell.
Gene, that's the reason to this day when I get a pen, I always demand that it be a Bic Banana. That's the finest pen money can buy, the Bic Banana.
I remember that.
Well, I have two more.
What else?
One is established, and the other one is kind of in transition. The other word is theater, or sometimes people just say theater.
Theater.
When I was young, it was theater.
Yeah.
And my kids go nuts when I say that.
You still say it like that?
Occasionally, it slips out, yes. And then the third one I noticed, and this is kind of recent, they're referring to female performers as actors.
Oh, that's been going on for a while.
Well, you know, it always used to be actor or actress, depending on, you know, whether they were male or female.
Right.
And it seems like they're not using the term actress anymore.
I kind of like that they don't.
It makes it more unified.
Yeah.
Kinda. Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
You know, just I like they're all under the actor umbrella.
Right, yeah.
Right. Well, as long as they do a good job, I don't care.
Gene, since you're a teacher, Wendy and I have discussed this one in the past, but I think you'll appreciate it. We always said crayons. Get a box of crayons. But a lot of kids now will just say crayons, like a cranberry.
Right. They do. They have their own little accent, and of course, with texting, that makes it even more interesting.
Yeah, I bet.
And now when you have an iPhone and you go to text, like, you want to go out for pizza, a little image of a piece of pizza will show up, so it replaces the entire word. So pretty soon we'll be just talking in pictures.
Yeah, it's spelling tests are quite phenomenal.
I can imagine.
Thank you, Gene.
Thanks, Gene. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too. All the time.
Oh, you're very kind. Thanks.
Thank you. And we in radio, of course, don't call it a magic marker or a marker. We call it a Sharpie.
Right. The official ink pen of the radio industry.
Yep.
All right. Let's take a quick break. Ryan Burrow has the news. And then Dean Richards will explain which movies to see and which to avoid this weekend. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
All right, Bill. I am so glad Dean is here. I heard him breathing, so I know he's there.
Oh, thank God.
I forgot to double check.
There he is.
It's the microphone. The microphone's broken. What? Wrong. Wrong.
Dean, your name came up on the show earlier, and here's why. A caller called. We were talking about a bunch of different things, and Tyler Perry's name came up, and they said somebody from your station just interviewed Tyler Perry, and I think it's you, isn't it?
That would be me.
All right.
There's a cross-dressing 6'5 giant man. I'm there.
Why not?
And what's the name of the character of the movie?
Madea.
And I was calling people Madeer.
That's why.
And that's the guy thought maybe I heard your interview, which I didn't, but I'm going to find it online and listen
to it.
That's
a little bit how, I mean, Madea, you know, sort of talks, you know, kind of abbreviates her speech that way. So even though her given name is Madea, if she's shorting, it might be Madeer.
It could be.
Could be,
yeah,
like
that makes sense. That makes perfect sense.
Is Tyler Perry a guy?
If she's talking to Rose Kennedy, it could be Madeer.
Yeah, of course.
Somebody from Boston. What?
Were you talking to Rose Kennedy, Wendy?
Ty.
It's possible.
In my dreams.
It's possible.
Tyler. Wait, you do not know that Tyler Perry is a guy?
You knew that.
Yeah, I knew that.
You knew that.
But so his character is a woman that
is
I don't
woman.
Know.
Tyler Perry is an actor who started these stage shows based on this sort of loudmouth, gun-toting, fast-tempered granny named Madea. Actually started it here in Chicago at the what's now called the Regal Theater, the old Avalon Theater on 79th and Yates on the southeast side, the theater where I saw my first movies as a young boy.
Cute.
And then the stage shows moved to the Erie Crown Theater, became super popular, really, really popular. And a few years ago, Tyler Perry tried taking this persona from successful stage shows around the country to the movies. And I believe the first one was Diary of an Angry Black Woman.
Mm-hmm.
And it was tremendously successful. And really, that's what launched the Tyler Perry empire that he has now, of many, many television shows, many, many motion pictures, not just Madea movies, but serious movies also.
Like Precious?
Production company. I don't think he was involved.
Oh, wasn't he? I
Precious.
Thought that was part of his.
That was Lee Daniels.
Oh, sorry.
I believe that was right. Lee Daniels.
That could be it.
Because Tyler Perry also puts his name in all the titles. It's like Tyler Perry presents a Madea Halloween. Or
Boo.
Like Boo. So
that's the name of it. Not kidding.
Same kind of deal. But, you know, that launched this Tyler Perry mega media empire that currently is exists, and it's based out of Atlanta. He's a pretty big deal, and he was in Chicago this week for a Chicago premiere of his Halloween movie. And we got to talk to him about we talked about the movie. We talked about, you know, Madea and his roots here in Chicago. He was once homeless, once lived out of his car.
Wow.
Really, I mean, it's quite a story of you know, literally rags to riches for him. We talked about he's also extremely philanthropic now.
Yeah.
Donating money to lots of social and political causes, scholarship foundations. He donated money to, was it Reverend Corey Brooks? Was that his name? Who was
on top of the
camped out on the, top of the dilapidated motel?
Yeah,
yeah.
Until he raised enough money to turn it into a community center. I'm not even sure if that it's ever turned into a community center. But Tyler Perry stepped forward and donated a huge amount of money to get him off the roof. So he could meet his goal.
I love when people give back like that. Really,
extremely charitable. I mean, he knows what it, literally knows what it's like to be hungry, to not have anything, to just have someone to be generous and help out for a second, so you can get on your feet and get back going again. That's what he's about. So we talked about that. We talked about the conditions here in Chicago right now. And Madea gave her political endorsement also this week.
Yay.
Madea is... as
so a fictional character.
I don't want to turn this into a political
a
thing.
Character.
A fictional character says, in his Madea voice, says that she is voting for Hillary Clinton, but said, oh, wait a minute, Medea's a felon. She can't vote.
I got to look into this more. I've never seen any Tyler Perry stuff.
Dean, just for the record, I'm looking up on IMDb the movie Precious, and we're both right. Both Lee Daniels and Tyler Perry were
you
some of the...
You can't let it go, can you?
I seem to remember on Oprah her having Tyler Perry on, because she was also one of the producers. Actually, you can't name a name of a person on the planet that was not one of the producers of the movie Precious. Everybody.
So really, I could have said Buster Keaton. And
also
still,
a producer from the movie
correct.
Precious.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. The Ritz brothers were, they were involved. Right. Dr. Lester Fisher from Ark in the Park, one of the producers. So they both are.
I'm glad you were also correct, because I don't want to be responsible for you being wrong with the pop trivia question.
No. Now, are you as torn on Tyler Perry as I am? And here's why I'm torn. All the things you mentioned about him are all very admirable things. The guy went out, he was homeless, and he turned his life around, and he gives incredible amounts of money to charities and stuff like that. But I think that the bulk of his movies are sellouts. Don't you kind of, to an extent, that he's playing least common denominator to the audience? No?
I think there was a time that I would have said that.
But not anymore?
I think I've grown to appreciate the movies in a different way. I mean, who's to say what you or I may not think it's things, certain things are funny or maybe sold out. But people love those movies.
I mean, oh, I know.
You know, it's
I know.
I don't want to say it's I don't want to say it's like the Three Stooges, but there is a sort of a common thread that really speaks to people.
What's wrong with the Three Stooges?
No, I love the Three Stooges, but I
mean, Bill's
not
a fan of them
either. I don't like the Three Stooges.
A lot of people say that that's lowest common denominator, but and it's certainly not high art, but it just
makes you laugh.
It just speaks to a really basic, sort of common shared experience.
I love the plots and all
that
of
a lot
the,
of people,
the plots
Stooges.
Are very thick plots.
Right. Oh, Larry, the cheese.
Yeah.
But
anytime
you know what it reminds me of, Dean?
A baby through an automatic car wash.
Right.
That's hilarious.
Here's
with
what
a gun in its mouth.
Here's what it reminds me of. I know Adam Sandler because when I did stand-up, I worked with Adam a bunch of times, and he's one of the funniest people I know, and I can't go to see his movies because I just think they're beyond stupid.
I like them.
Do you?
I mean, it's not like it's going to change my life, and I probably wouldn't go to a theater to see it.
Yeah,
but if it's on,
you watch it.
I think he's funny.
I'm with Bill on the Adam Sandler movies.
Yeah. Everyone has their own taste.
I think that's what it is. It's just not my cup of tea anymore. I think for Adam Sandler movies especially, I've just found them offensive.
Yeah.
The comedy is often in really bad taste. And at somebody else's expense. And I know comedy, you know, you can't be too politically correct with comedy, but there are some incredibly offensive Adam Sandler movies.
And the problem with that is, because I've met him on so many occasions, he's so funny and he's such a nice guy.
You're
capable of so much better than this. That's what I think of with Tyler Perry.
What was that movie that he did, Bill, that was kind of dramatic? Was
Punch,
it Punch Drunk
Love?
Yeah, it's really good.
That's an amazing movie, and it didn't do well financially. We may not like his movies, but they're consistently some of the highest grossing films that are out there.
And Spanglish was good, Dean, and the one he did with Don Cheadle was good. There are some, actually, I got to be honest, there's more than some. Wedding Singer's good, but for the most part, it's just they're really stupid.
But that's your opinion.
There's a pot for every lid. I think, maybe just in getting older, I'm just realizing that, or maybe it's just a little immaturity,
what?
A little less immaturity for me than
that's
usual. That I just realized it's like it may not be my cup of tea, the Adam Sandler movies, but somebody's finding them funny. And I do have to say, in the beginning, I couldn't stand the Madea movies.
Yeah,
I thought they were incredibly stupid, but. As I'm starting to kind of like get into the groove of them a little bit. I don't know what it is, I'm finding them kind of funny. I mean, there's a scene that's in this trailer. I haven't seen the Madea Halloween movie yet, but she's a tough granny, and in this movie there are like spooks and goblins and Halloween kind of things that scare her. There's a scene in which he's running down the street screaming, "Help me, Jesus, help me, Jesus." I spit out coffee laughing.
But can I tell you something?
It's a 6'5" man dressed as a woman.
Right.
And her fake boobs are flopping all over the place. I know it's stupid. There's nothing intelligent about that. It's just a stupid, silly sight gag. I laugh my head off. I'm laughing now thinking about it.
And at that moment, that's where it tickled you. You know what I mean? Like a different moment, maybe you wouldn't have spit out your coffee. But if something makes you laugh or makes you feel good, who's anyone else to judge?
Exactly. That's how I feel, too.
All right.
That's how I feel.
Dean Richards is here. Amen. And
we can judge him.
We can judge Dean. If you want to call and judge Dean, 312-981.
What we just said applies, except if you're judging me.
Right. Then it changes. All right. Stick around. We've got more for you next. It's Bill and Wendy along with Dean Richards on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Dean Richards is with us. Dean, this movie Girl on a Train looks really good, is it?
I will be seeing it tonight, actually, so I don't have a review on that just yet. I'm actually hearing really mixed reviews about it. So,
what's the premise of this?
There's a girl.
And
on a train?
Yes.
Awesome.
Are you in?
Yep.
She rides this train and, I guess, fantasizes.
Ooh, I'm totally in.
About what her life could be, what she sees, what she imagines from other people, that she observes doing the same things every day, same routines. Don't know, because I haven't seen it, but that's from what I've heard. It is described as a psychological thriller. I've heard from some other friends who have seen it that they were really mixed on it.
Mm.
That they really enjoyed the performances but did not like the storyline. They didn't think the movie was put together as well as it could have been. So I'll have I'll be able to fill in a few more blanks tomorrow on Steve's show on that. But it's Emily Blunt. I mean, it's got a really terrific cast.
Did you hear that story about Lisa Kudrow's character in the movie, her name?
I did not.
Her name in the movie, and this is based on a book also called The Girl on the Train.
Phoebe Buffay?
No, but close. It's Monica, and they said when they were making the movie, it was so distracting to see Lisa Kudrow being referred to as Monica, they changed it to Martha.
That would be weird.
Yeah. All right, so that's we don't know yet on Girl on the Train, But what about Birth of a Nation?
This looks huge. This is going to be one of the biggest movies of the year for sure. It is a remake of the 1915 Civil War silent film.
D.W. Griffith.
D.W. Griffith. Thank you very much for throwing that in.
I never know anything and can never participate with you guys, so I wanted to show
you that one.
When you got something like that, you got to throw it in.
And Wendy told me earlier D.W. Griffith was the sheriff of Mayberry, which is also a fun fact.
I was going to say Opie's father. But
right?
He was. That works just as well. That's the two pea brains that you're working with today, Wendy.
Oh, great. It's a remake of the original.
It's a remake of that film, which is a pretty racist, a silent Civil War film. It's from 1915. It's a kind of amazing to watch just that it's so old and you know how they told stories then. But this time, the story is told from the perspective of one of the slaves, a slave named Nat Turner, who... was an obedient slave to his owners. He grew up with a young boy on this plantation who grew up to be his friend and eventually become, when you know the father passed away, eventually became his owner. So they had a unique relationship, but still he was a slave and was treated like a slave, not only by his one-time friend, but by all of the other white slave owners in the area as well. And it's a story about how this one guy just really gets fed up, really has enough, and starts a rebellion against his white captors, the white slave owners. And it's a powerful movie in a lot of senses. I mean, it's very 12 Years a Slave-like.
Mm-hmm.
It's very brutal to watch in many cases, like 12 Years a Slave, for the brutality that takes place and that you're watching in this and that you can't even imagine that human beings were once treated like that. And really not that long ago that this happened. But the fortitude that it took for this one person to say, I've had enough, and stand up and try to motivate others to also stand up with him, that is kind of ringing back into the headlines of today. I couldn't stop thinking about the protests that are going on today where, you know, there are African-American people who feel mistreated and are standing up and saying, we've had enough. So in that sense, I think the film is rather brilliantly written to not only tell the story of the slave, Nat Turner, but to make a comparison to what is going on in the world today. The movie not only stars Nate Parker, actor Nate Parker, he also directs the movie. He co-produced the movie and co-wrote the movie as well. So it's very much a passion of his to tell the story. Now, I think it's powerful. It's very moving. It's one of these movies, when you walk out of it, it's going to stay with you for a day or two, thinking about the sadness of what one human being was capable of inflicting on another human being, and what was the breaking point for some people to no longer take beatings and subservient kind of behavior. But at the same time, the way that the story is told, I think, is a little bit scattered. Some of the impact and power of this film, I think it's lost in the way that the story skips around a little bit.
Mm.
It needed to be threaded together a little more cohesively, and I think it would have been a true masterpiece. There are moments in this movie where you'll get goosebumps. There are moments that are so unbelievably moving and touching and visually beautiful to watch in their sadness and their poignancy, that it is masterpiece like, but I think it fails to really ring the bell on all counts. So I think it's great. I think the performances are great in this movie. Problem with the direction, I gave it an A-. I really liked it. Now that said, this movie is also loaded with controversy.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because Nate Parker, the star, the director, the producer, the co-writer of this film, was involved in a rape case several years ago. I have to say, a rape case in which he was vindicated. But still was involved in a case where a woman with whom he had a previous sexual relationship was raped. There are lots of technicalities in this case, but still sexual violence.
In 1999.
Yeah. Not so long ago.
Right.
And some people say that he got off on a technicality. Some people said that he got off because he had had a previous sexual relationship with a woman who was raped, and it was implied consent. That's a whole other subject to get into. So there is a lot of sexual violence in this movie. There are several rape scenes in this movie, and you can't help but think about this real-life case that hangs over this movie. So that's also part of it. I think this is just one of these cases, like a Woody Allen movie or watching a Bill Cosby episode or something, where you have to, in your mind, either separate or don't separate the art from the artist.
Thank you, Dean.
Dean, we appreciate it. Have a great weekend.
Bye, guys.
Kim, thank you very much. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Part two of our show. If you didn't hear part one, there's podcasts available. If you want to jump in on part two, 312-981-7200.
I cannot find anything, Bill.
All right.
I'm sorry.
This just in from the newsroom. Wendy cannot find anything.
I just have piles and piles of stuff.
I just quickly, while you're looking, I want to talk to Kim for just a little bit. Kim, every time I hear news about these storms, it sounds more and more tragic. Is there any good news to be had at all?
No, and actually, nothing. I just got a warning on my phone from the Weather Channel that said possibly now Hurricane Matthew could be a 5 by the time it hits Florida.
No.
So it looks like it's increasing in strength, which is not good.
That's dreadful.
And did I read somewhere that almost every house on Haiti was destroyed?
I don't know that, but I know that the death toll now is over 100.
Already.
So it's, And I know they're still searching, and there's a lot of rubble and a lot of things to be cleaned up. So it's just not, it's not a good situation. People need to heed the warnings.
And the worst hurricane since 2007, I believe. I feel like we haven't had a lot of hurricane activity in the last several years. Am I wrong? Just because I'm not affected by it, I'm not noticing it?
It seems like it's been kind of... You know, there haven't been major, major hurricanes. I think, like, you know, I don't know if you heard my news report earlier, but they've shut down all the theme parks in Orlando, and they haven't done that since 1999.
All right. Earlier, I think Universal Studios was the first one to say that they were doing it, but Disney almost never. They did after September
11th. They've closed
11th,
now. They're closing at 5 today.
Wow. Okay. So that's serious. No flights in or out of Florida, right?
Nope.
And I know the governor has said emphatically, you need to evacuate. We're not kidding around. There's no joking here. Get out.
Well, and President Obama's declared a state of emergency in Florida within the past probably 30 minutes to 45 minutes.
And 1.5 million people will be fleeing. If I hear word of this, I'm out of there.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I know that's your house, and I know people want to stay with their house, but it's a matter of life or death. You can repair the house.
What did he say? He said almost essentially that. The governor said that houses can be replaced, lives cannot, or words to that effect. When I was a kid, we would vacation in that part of South Florida. Part of the storm is through West Palm Beach and through Fort Lauderdale, and that's essentially where we were. We were in Delray Beach, and we'd always go toward the end of August, and you would see the locals that time of year, end of August into the beginning of September, doing everything they could to hurricane-proof their houses or apartments or condos, just putting up, you know, as much barrier as they possibly could. And realistically, I remember talking to people who lived out there, they said, you hope for the best, but you realize that these precautions we're taking in a serious hurricane, and this is, if it's a 4 and possibly a 5, that is a serious hurricane. He said, it's going to do little, if anything, to help protect our properties.
Emergency managers trying to get residents to leave an area on the path of a storm can be like parents trying to get their children to do something. Governor Scott of Florida, for example, urged, "This storm will kill you.
Yeah.
Time is running out."
Boy,
aren't you out of there?
Yeah.
And are you gonna, if you're at Disney right now, are you gonna wait till 5 o'clock to leave?
No.
No, you're loading up. You're on the way out.
No.
But, you know, it's even if people have driven down there, I mean, it's even going to be bad in Georgia. So depending on where you live and up the Carolinas, it's going to be hard to escape.
They have,
you know, you have to go way, way inland.
They have what they consider, they call them point blank when you're driving around Florida, it's evacuation routes. But But I can't imagine what the traffic must be like as everybody is trying to get out at the
same
time.
Well, I know they, you know, make all the highways going out.
Right.
So you can go on both sides to help it. I've seen that on TV and stuff, but it's still, you know, it's going to be crazy. And if you've seen, you know, any video, the grocery store shelves are completely empty.
Yeah.
I have a Facebook friend who also went to my high school, and she had taken a picture of cars on the expressway trying to get out. They were trying to get inland. They finally made it into Tennessee and were able to at least sleep for the night, and they're continuing to move inland.
Wow.
But so scary.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Calls are coming in. You know how to get us. We're 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us at that number.
Let's talk to Bob. Hey, Bob.
What's going on, guys?
You know a little something about this, don't you, Bob?
Yeah, I flew down to Orlando this morning. I worked for the airlines and had the 6 a.m. departure out of O'Hare down to Orlando and back. And I was actually expecting the plane to be pretty empty because who would be wanting to go to Florida now?
Yeah.
We had a full boat of people going down there. And it was almost like the fall of Saigon getting out, where everyone was trying to get on the airplane. But we were full getting out of there.
And now the flights are canceled. Were you one of the last flights into Florida this morning?
We asked the controllers when we were there on the ground what the status of Orlando was. And they said that they were shutting the airport down at 5 o'clock tonight. So when we left, it was still open, and there were still people coming in. We had heard that the airports in South Florida, you know, Miami, Fort Lauderdale, West Palm, those closed earlier this morning, like about 8 or 9 o'clock this morning, sometime around then.
I realize, you know, if you've made plans to go to Disney with your family, you have the tickets, but I don't know. I'm a worrywart. Maybe I buy the insurance. Wouldn't you just say, okay, kids, we're going to have to reschedule?
This isn't meant to be.
Yeah. I would not go down there to play in this hurricane because, I mean, like you guys were saying earlier, if you're going there for Disney, well, Disney's closed, you know?
Right.
So I would push it off and do something different.
Yeah. Is the handling of the plane, Bob, I know if you were there this morning, the eye of the storm was nowhere near you quite yet, but could you already feel it in the handling of the plane that there was storms even in the area?
Yeah, well, there was some weather coming into Orlando right there at the airport that we had to go around. It wasn't anything bad. It wasn't anything really organized that we couldn't get around.
Mm-hmm.
But the, you know, they call them the outer bands of the storm. They are starting to impact the area. It was actually more of a headache getting out of O'Hare this morning with the thunderstorms that came through right at 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
That took a little more doing than getting into Orlando. But I wouldn't want to fly down there, you know, tomorrow to be sure.
No, I bet not. Well, Bob, thank you. We appreciate it.
Thanks
so much.
Hey, enjoy the show, guys.
Thank you, sir.
Stay safe.
Yeah. Right.
More calls, 312-981-7200. And, you know, if you have people in Florida, relatives, family members, are you keeping track of what's going on and have they gotten out? We'll talk to you. 312-981-7200. It's Bill. It's Wendy at 720 WGN. Hey, Bears fan. Grab a copy of the Chicago Tribune at Jewel Osco this Sunday to collect your 2016 Chicago Bears Fathead Tradables. Collect all eight now through October 30th. Hurricane Matthew, up to 1.5 million Americans were fleeing as Matthew eyed the South Atlantic coastal U.S. as a Category 4 storm. It was downgraded. It had dipped to a Category 3, regained strength late this morning. With maximum sustained winds of 140 miles per hour, according to the National Hurricane Center. And as Kim mentioned in the news, it might be upgraded to a Category 5. Of course, we will keep you posted. And we talked to a pilot, Bob, who had flown out there this morning and was surprised that the plane was full. I know you have a certain time where you've planned your vacation, but why in the world would you fly into this?
Well, I imagine it's more than just vacationers. I'm sure it's plenty of people who are probably away on business, maybe came to Chicago for business and lived there. And maybe even if they are evacuating, want to leave along with the rest of their family. So it's probably a cross-section.
All right. Hi, Frank. How are you?
Hey, Bill. Hi, Wendy. I had a question. The Disney's shutting down at 5 o'clock today.
I know that there's a Disney hotel that neighbors the theme park. I wonder if the hotel is telling people, even though you've made a reservation to stay here while you visit Disney, because of the situation and because we're mandating an evacuation, I wonder if they're kicking people out of the hotel that were planning to stay there.
Well, it's more than just one hotel. There's three hotels that are right next to the park, and then there's almost a dozen more that are nearby. I don't know that they would be able to fully close them down. I mean, I guess anything's possible in a storm like this.
Why wouldn't they? They would have to evacuate.
I guess
so, in the event of any kind of damage created by the storm, Disney would not want to be liable. So I'm guessing they're going to have to cancel people's reservations and say, because of what's going on, we can't be liable for what may happen to you because we're not going to be able to protect you or anyone else in the event of a tragedy.
So what would they do? Would they just leave like a security team back to make sure that the properties aren't just totally mangled by people? You know what I mean?
I think everybody, guests, this according to Orlando, Florida News Channel 2, they are saying that guests are ordered to evacuate the Wilderness Resort and Campground. As Hurricane Matthew starts to move in on Florida's coast, Orlando's theme and amusement parks are trying to decide when they should close. Disney will evacuate its Fort Wilderness Resort and Campground. A Disney spokesperson told WESH2 News that many guests are in RVs and tents.
All right, so
Disney
that's
wants
why.
Guests to check out by 11 a.m. Thursday morning. It's supposed to hit landfall, I believe, this evening.
Yeah. All right, so that's why.
Yeah, I'm just surprised that the theme park is open at all today, as if people are looking at their watches. Okay, kids, we got about 2 hours left before we have to get out of here.
Let's get on Splash Mountain one more time before it turns into really Splash Mountain.
I'm sure the theme park is pretty empty, but today is not the day to go to Disney.
No.
Frank,
not at all.
Thank you very much. Frank. Susan wanted to talk about this as well. Hi, Susan.
Hello there. So we live in Chicago, and we have a house outside of Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
And we had our car totally packed. We looked like the Beverly Hillbillies. We were going to leave Wednesday morning to drive down. And at the last minute, we said, because we're afraid no power for 4 or 5 days. It's 90 degrees. You have no air. The restaurants are closed.
Right.
Our son lives in the same subdivision we do, and they left last night with the kids for Tallahassee, and he said that there were three families checking in behind him, and there was no room.
Hmm.
The hotels in Tallahassee are booked, so people have to get out early. And I'm worried more about no power and the trees coming down, you know, and we're on the coast. So.
And for people listening and who don't know the geography of Florida, Tallahassee is more inland. So you got people who are more along the coastline moving inland toward Tallahassee. That's the reason there's no hotels.
Yeah, Tallahassee is in the panhandle as far west as you can get.
Yeah.
Well, someone has texted
across the state.
Someone has texted us right now, Susan, saying that my nephew lives in Orlando, and he says it's 87 and sunny so far today. But again, the storm is supposed to hit approaching nightfall tonight.
Yeah.
Right. And then if you lose power, you know, then what do you do?
Oh, then you're stuck. So you'll reschedule, obviously, Susan, for later in the month or maybe next month?
Well, we were hoping to leave Sunday because everything I own is still packed in my car. I'm ready to go. So.
Yeah.
But I don't know that Sunday's going to be good. Jacksonville is probably going to be hit. So we're thinking maybe Sunday wouldn't be a good idea. The other problem you have is getting there because we come through South Carolina, and Interstate 26 has been turned into evacuation route.
Oh.
So no eastbound traffic, and Interstate 16 through Georgia has now been stopped for eastbound. So getting from Chicago to Florida is going to be a problem also.
Well, thank you, and good luck to you, Susan. I hope you have a safe trip when you decide to go. 630 has texted us, and maybe Kim can help when she does the news. It says, flying to Fort Myers tomorrow for my father-in-law's memorial service. Thank you, Kim. We will, of course, keep you posted on any changes in Hurricane Matthew's status. But right now, Bill, you and I have been talking about this upcoming election.
Sure. Of course.
And I have made you promise me that Donald Trump is not going to win.
Right. You said that on several occasions.
And you've kind of made me that promise. I have a feeling Donald Trump is going to win the presidency.
Oh.
I don't know what to do, what to think, but I say, hey, let's go to the expert. History professor Alan Lichtman of American University in Washington has accurately predicted the popular result in presidential elections since Republican President Ronald Reagan defeated Democratic challenger Walter Mondale back in 1984. Welcome to the show, Alan Lichtman. How are you, professor? How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
All right. You are predicting between Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump. You've been right since 1984. Who do you say is going to win the election?
Well, this is as your conversation indicated, the most puzzling election in American history. Let me give you the prediction of my system and then give you my big qualification. I'm not hedging. I've never qualified a prediction in 30 years, but we've never seen an election like this.
Right. But you have some special case scenarios on this year's election.
That's right. I sure do. And I think that's consistent with what we all intuitively feel about this election, by the way. I don't think it's out of line. So here's how my system works. I've developed by looking at every election from 1860 through 1980, 120 years, 13 key factors that can predict a future election. And I've used them, as you indicated, successfully since then. And the way the keys work is they primarily gauge the strength and performance of the party holding the White House under the theory that elections are primarily referenda on how well the White House party has done. And if six or more of the 13 factors, 13 keys, go against the party in power, they are a predicted loser. Of course, today the party holding the White House is the Democrats. And right now the Democrats are down exactly six keys. You want me to go through them?
Yeah, do some of them for us. What are they?
Yeah, I can do them real fast.
All right.
Party mandate. They lost the midterm elections. That's one. Barack Obama is not running again. That's the incumbency key. That's two, hard to win an open seat. Three, Gary Johnson is polling 5 to 10 times better than any Libertarian ever has. Third parties are bad news for the White House party. That's three. Policy change. Obama won that last term with the Affordable Care Act, but nothing like that given the gridlock in the second term. And the keys go turn by term. So that's four. Foreign policy success. Again, nothing like the dispatch of Bin Laden in the first term. That's five. And then we get to the only key related to the candidate, and that is a very high threshold key. It asks whether or not the candidate is one of those, once in a generation, extraordinary charismatic candidates like a Barack Obama or a Ronald Reagan, and Hillary Clinton clearly does not qualify. So that's six down, just enough to say this should be a change here.
So Democrats will not be holding the White House, allegedly, at this point in your prediction?
Based on history, that's okay. Right. And if you had a generic Republican running like a John Kasich, I would never qualify that prediction. But you don't have a generic Republican running. You have Donald Trump running, a candidate.
So that could change everything.
Everything. He's been rejected by newspapers that haven't endorsed a Democrat in 50 to 100 years. 30 former Republican members of Congress, including some very distinguished ones, just today came out with a manifesto saying we reject Donald Trump because he's too dangerous. He has no history of public service. He has a history of enriching himself at the expense of everybody else. He said a dozen things that would drive any other candidate out of the race, and scandals just keep piling up. Just recently we've learned he's run an illegal charity that didn't register in New York to escape audits. We heard testimony from lots of folks on his apprenticeship that he created a hostile environment for women. He busted the Cuban embargo at the very time he is, how we say, trumpeting the Cuban embargo. So there are so many things that make him a history-shattering, not a history-representative candidate.
Alan, a couple of questions. Question number one, you just mentioned these various keys that you use as indicators. Are these keys equally weighted?
That's a great question. And the secret to my system is that they are equally weighted. The reason traditional prediction models fail, you know, they're equations. So they would say the percent of the vote for the party in power equals some multiplier by some factor. But the multipliers change every 4 years unpredictably. Because my keys are equally weighted, I don't have to guess what the multipliers are. Plus, if one key is really important, it will trigger the loss of other keys. So the Vietnam War, for example, in the 60s, triggered all kinds of other keys.
You talked about the idea on, I think, your last key of a more dynamic personality.
Charismatic, I believe, was the word.
Something that would make that candidate stand out. You could certainly say that Barack Obama, especially 8 years ago, did get some points because he was to be the first African-American president. Would those same points be applicable to Hillary Clinton since she would be the first woman president?
Very good question. And I did give Obama the charisma key.
Yeah.
Not because he would be the first black president, although, you know, that was an element of his appeal. He had the magic in 2008. He had that ability to truly inspire us, and not just like Donald Trump, you know, a narrow slice of the electorate. Across the board, he has the magic. And even though Hillary Clinton is a path-breaking candidate, as a woman, as we know, she doesn't have the Obama magic or the Kennedy magic or the Reagan magic.
She's not very charismatic, I got to tell you. I'm not saying
she's not
qualified and she wouldn't do a great job, but she is not. She doesn't have that charisma.
That's all that question asks.
But now this question might have differed if there was another woman candidate running.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, we're sick of the Clintons, we're sick of the Bushes, and Donald Trump, we don't know what to think.
Alan, are you disturbed by your own prediction?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I share all these reservations about Donald Trump, and, you know, I I'm not a Republican myself, but I got lots of good Republican friends, and none of them are voting for Donald Trump. They have the same reservations these 30 members of Congress have. And what a lot of them told me is, look, you know, I don't like Hillary Clinton. You know, I don't like big government liberal policies, but I don't want Donald Trump anywhere near the nuclear arsenal.
You know, what's funny is when we were kids, there used to be these TV ads for a guy named Boxcar Willie. And they'd say Boxcar Willie has sold over 13 million albums. And you go, well, how did he do that? Because I don't know anybody that owns a Boxcar Willie album. Doesn't Donald Trump kind of remind you of that, in that you hear all these statistics about people who love him and want to vote for him, but I only know a very small percentage and a handful of people who are really supporters and are going to vote for him?
I know one, but, you know, I'm here in the liberal state of Maryland, you know, where Hillary Clinton is 30 points ahead, so maybe, you know, I'm just in an unrepresentative area. But, you know, I experienced the same thing, as I said, including my Republican friends, some of whom are pretty conservative and, you know, can't abide Hillary Clinton, quite frankly. But at least they say she's not dangerous.
That's what it may come down to. I know you don't have a lot of time, but a question for you. Sunday night is the next presidential debate. What is your expectation for the next couple of debates?
It's a great question. Normally, under my key system, debates don't matter, campaigns don't matter, speeches don't matter, fundraising doesn't matter. I've actually predicted elections years in advance, including having predicted the 2012 election, a really hard election to call. Remember, pretty late after that first debate, Romney was ahead. I called it in 2010. Have you heard of Nate Silver?
Yeah.
No.
I got into a huge fight with Nate Silver. He's a forecaster who uses polls very frequently.
Yeah.
We got into a huge fight in 2011 because he said, you can't call an election this early. And he wrote a 15-page attack on the keys. Being a professor, I wrote a 15-page response. Of course, I was right. He was wrong.
Sure.
So he did eventually come around. And I wrote him an email saying, let's collaborate on an article showing how two different methods can ultimately come up with the same answer. Never heard from the guy again. But this time the debates matter because of Donald Trump. The debates are a golden opportunity for Donald Trump to dampen down all of these blemishes on his record, all of these outrageous things he said. Instead of doing that in the first debate, he inflamed them. I was astounded what he did in the first debate. He still has a shot, but you know, a lot of these impressions are getting pretty well fixed in the mind of the public. His best shot was the first debate.
Yeah,
I wouldn't say he has no shot in the second and third debate, but it's going to be much harder.
Come November, after
two
the
historical forces clashing, it's a great year to follow politics.
Yep.
It really is. I'm not a fan of politics, but you have to pay attention to it at this point for this year. Professor Alan Lichtman of American University in Washington, we would love to talk to you after the results of the election are in and see how you did. The 13 keys to the White House and their coding. You can find this information. Where's the best place to send people? Do you have a website?
Get my buy my book. I have a Wikipedia page, but buy the book because you can't get the full nuance of the system just by, you know, a quick glance at it. The book goes in depth to every single key, explains its rationale, and explains how to turn the key. And if you get my book, you can be a do-it-yourself predictor. Can't do it with the equations. You can do it with the keys.
Keys to the White House, is that the name of the book?
Predicting the next president, the keys to the White House.
And Alan, really quick, because I know you have to go, but since you're in the business of predictions, the Cubs won a World Series 108 years ago, which isn't bad, but they're up for one again. Now, do they stand a chance? Do you know anything about baseball? Can you predict baseball the way you predict presidential
elections?
God, you are
so desperate to find out.
I just want to know.
Let me tell you a 10-second story.
Sure.
I've been approached many times by gamblers saying, we want you to use your mathematical methodology for sports betting,
yeah,
and I haven't done it because I don't want to wind up in the Chicago River.
All right, that's fair.
And overshoes, so I can't predict, but I have to tell you, I'm a Nats fan.
Yeah.
If the Nats don't make it, the Cubs have my heart.
Oh, good. Thank you. We appreciate that.
You can follow him on Twitter, too, at Alan Lichtman. Pleasure to talk to you, and we look forward to talking to you again.
You know where to find me.
Thanks,
right,
Alan.
Cool. Thank
Take
you.
Care. It's Alan Lichtman. We'll take a very quick break, and then we'll be back in just a minute or two. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Did you just see the sun come out?
Yeah, and it took like a second. It went from really gloomy to really sunny all of a sudden. Good, I like that.
Can I just tell you, nothing is easy for me and my family. We're getting a new roof. We have a complete tear-off right now on the house, so there's just tar paper up there.
You're without a roof on your house?
Yeah, because, you know, when you're in the process of getting it done, it takes a couple of days. And they couldn't work on it today because it's pouring.
Right.
And we don't have a roof on our house.
Oh, no.
I don't know what I'm going to go home to. So I'd like to see the sun for a little while
yeah,
longer.
Yeah, that's better. Remember yesterday I was telling you how as a kid, during baseball season, Jewel would run this promotion where you could go in and every week they offered you two different Cubs players and two different White Sox players. And being a fan of both teams, I would go and get both. So that was four pictures a week. Not quite 8x10, just a little smaller. And then my whole wall in my room had Cubs on one side and White Sox on the other side, just staring at each other.
Yeah.
As if to say, one day maybe one of us will make it to the World Series. So
how's
I was
that
talking
going
about
for
how
you?
Hasn't been very successful in the past. Looking a little bit better.
You're still young.
Right now. So I said at the end of this, I don't think a kid today would care about a baseball player's picture to put it up in their room. Like a picture or a poster. I guess there's one or two kids out there, but it's not like it used to be where all my friends had pictures of the Cubs or White Sox. Then I open up the Sun-Times a little while ago, and look what I find, this giant picture of Ben Zobrist, the Cubs second baseman, and I'm putting that up in my room when I get home. I'm sure my wife will be thrilled.
I was just going to say, how will Terry feel about
oh,
that?
Oh, she'll love it. She'll love it.
He's a cutie.
Ben Zobrist?
For a Cub.
Remember, we had his wife in. She sang us a song.
She had a beautiful voice.
I was on
Were you
vacation.
Not here? Oh, yeah. Didn't
I was
she have a great
Tennessee.
Voice?
Yeah, she was great.
Yeah, she was a very pretty voice.
I would like to give my little sports update. I don't have anything to hang on my wall, but Jimmy Mack went to the grocery store last night, and I'm telling you, every time, and I'm not going to group all men together.
Even though it's easy to do with guys.
I may do this. Kim, I don't know if your husband does this, but when Jim goes to the store, every time there's something new, some kind of new product,
yeah.
it ends up in his cart.
Oh, I
like,
get
oh,
that.
Like, oh, Chipotle-flavored Twinkies. Oh, I got to try these.
Yeah.
That was my grandfather, not my husband. My grandfather would go to the grocery for two things and come out with like seven bags.
I'm telling you, it's a difference when I shop. And, you know, Jim gets the staples that I say,
yeah,
you know,
right.
chicken breast
yeah.
and low-carb wraps. But then He comes home.
If you see something new and shiny, a guy's going to buy it because we want to try it.
This is the only time I am so proud of him for picking up a brand new item.
What did he get?
I am going to post a picture of it on our Facebook page. You know how we love the Blackhawks, and you know that there's a certain guy that I love more than anything, good old number two.
Look at this. This is real?
Only at Jewel Osco. Maybe they have it elsewhere, but this is my husband was at the Jewels last night.
Do you want to say what it is,
Go
or
ahead.
Should I?
You're looking at a picture
of it.
It's
a breakfast cereal that looks to be, well, it says right on there, it's some sort of cornflakes.
Frosted cornflakes?
All right, except that on the box is a picture of our own Duncan Keith, and it's called Keith Crunch. It's a breakfast
Crunch
cereal
with a K.
It's a breakfast cereal endorsed by, and I'm guess flavored to taste like Duncan Keith.
Oh, my God. If it's taste, ew, wow.
I wonder if there's some of his teeth in there, too. He's lost a few.
What are these crunchy bits in with my cornflakes? They taste like teeth. They couldn't be teeth.
What's it called?
They're Keith teeth. Keith Crunch.
It should be called Teeth Crunch.
Right. Right.
But there's a picture of the good old alternate captain on the front of the box.
That's fantastic. I didn't know this existed.
Yeah, it says Frosted Corn Flakes, limited edition collector's box. The weird thing is there is no Blackhawk jersey on them.
It's the colors of your Chicago Blackhawks. It's the red, the black, and the white. But, yeah, obviously the team or the NHL didn't sign off on Keith Crunch.
Am I getting him in trouble by talking about it?
I hope not. That's the last thing you want to do.
Doesn't it look like the logo on his shirt is like a DK, like Duncan Keith?
Well, you would think that Jewel went about this and did it correctly after all their issues with the Michael Jordan thing. So
that was Dominic's.
That was Dominic's. So,
but
you
right.
would still think they would learn from that.
Although
yeah, you
maybe
would think.
Now it's even Steven if Jewel does this now with Duncan Keith. But it's called Keith Crunch, and I couldn't wait. I saw it on the table last night. I came home. I'm like, oh, Jim went shop. What is this?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I love it. And I said, I can't wait till breakfast. My 13-year-old son Dylan has told me that this is not for eating. This is for collecting.
Sure, he's right.
No, he's not.
Well, you could buy, I don't think it's going to be that expensive. You could probably get a second or third box, eat one box, keep the other on display.
Why don't you eat the cereal and just save
the
box?
Keep the box, yeah. That makes sense.
I don't know. Who in the world taught him about collecting?
I don't know. Where did that come from?
You taught my husband how to collect.
Right,
I really have you to punch for a lot of things.
It's but fun.
Go to get Keith Crunch. It'll taste as good as Duncan Keith looks.
There's their advertising
And plays
slogan.
Hockey.
One other quick Blackhawks note, as long as we're talking about pop culture. There's these things called Funko Pops. They stand about 4 inches tall, 4 or 5 inches tall. And they usually commemorate various stars of pop culture, things from the movies or television or comic books. You know, they have people from Scooby-Doo. They have people from movies from Star Wars.
Walking Dead.
Like that. Walking Dead. There's hundreds of them. I just saw that in November they are releasing Patrick Kane and Jonathan Taves.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I have to get that,
Isn't
too.
Isn't that cool?
Maybe I'm going to start my own little collection.
Yeah.
You're going to hang the Ben Zobrist in your room. I'm going to steal this box and put it up in my room.
Yep.
That might be bad.
That would be awful.
Because, you know, fantasies do happen.
Right. I know. All right. A quick break. Kim with the news. And then a lot more show coming your way. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder here on 720 WGN. Kim, thank you very much. I live out in LaGrange. My kids go to LT High School, and the rivals of LT, Hinsdale Central and Hinsdale South, in the news yesterday, and my kids came home and said, did you hear about the student? A 16-year-old Hinsdale South student was charged on Wednesday with 6 felony weapons charges following threats that he made to a fellow student, and the plot thickens. On the line with us right now is WGN-TV news reporter Tamon Bradley. How are you, Tamon?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Wendy?
Pretty good. All right. This is kind of scary to me. 16-year-old has been charged with 6 felony weapons charges. There was a post made to another student, I believe it was on Snapchat, and a student notified authorities and said, this is not looking right. Is that how it all started?
That's exactly right. A very disturbing story out there in suburban Darien, a really nice suburb. And the school says that they first got wind of this Monday night. Authorities already knew. They saw
the Snapchat post. Apparently there was a threat made against a student, and also there were some other postings where this 16-year-old threatened to shoot up the school. And so authorities followed up on a tip. They searched the teen's house and actually told that they had the permission of the teen's guardian to search the house. And when they went in, they found that this 16-year-old had the weapons to be able to shoot up the school.
What was found at the house?
Well, it was an arsenal: guns, ammunition, explosives, knives, gas masks. Also, according to prosecutors, the teen had a Nazi uniform, Nazi posters and flags, a lot of very dangerous stuff there.
All right. All of that disturbing, not a single part of it not disturbing. How did he obtain all these weapons? Do we know?
That's a good, yeah, that's a good question. That, you know, authorities are certainly going to want to get to the bottom of that. You know, this is a minor, so obviously he lived with his parents, and so they're going to want to find out what guardian would allow him to be able to amass an arsenal like that. That'll be part of the investigation going forward.
All right, a 16-year-old kid. I know that teenagers, I have two teenage boys, they're on Snapchat, Instagram, and all these social media accounts. I like to monitor their accounts. Maybe they have private ones that I'm unaware of, but I would certainly notice this paraphernalia if I looked inside their room.
Yeah, that's, you know, this is an important reminder, Wendy, that parents should be monitoring what their kids are doing on social media. That's one of the things that the superintendent of that district was stressing yesterday when we went out and talked to him. He said, you know, when it comes to social media, that's not private. You have to see what your kids are doing. If your kids are making threats, or if your kid is being threatened, because remember, it was a fellow student that came forward and alerted the authorities. In terms of having the weapons, I mean, you do reach a certain age. I remember back being 16, as I'm sure you guys do too, where you want your own privacy. You don't want your parents in your room. You don't want them knocking on the doors. But obviously, you know, parents have to be very aggressive and find out what's going on. I mean, this was a major arsenal that this suspect allegedly had. So, you know, the parents have some responsibility when it comes to all this.
And was it just displayed openly? Because I'm telling you, parents go in there and change the sheets on their kids'
sure.
bed. If you walked in the room, was it just visible? It wasn't like hidden anywhere?
You know, that's a very good question. What's really interesting is that when law enforcement arrived at the suspect's house, you know, they were there without a search warrant. They would have quickly moved to obtain it, but evidently they got permission to be able to go in, and they were able to quickly locate these items. So it does raise questions about were they hidden, were they out in the open. But, you know, obviously that raises all kinds of concerns. And just a reminder for parents, you have to check on what your kids are doing.
Tamon, to your knowledge, did the rest of the family, did the parents seem surprised or shocked that all this stuff was in their son's room?
Well, you know, we haven't heard any reaction from the parents, and obviously the suspect's identity is being kept secret, or at least we're not revealing the identity since it's a 16-year-old minor. So, obviously, very, very important questions. You know, I remember back in high school having friends that had an interest in swords and various weapons and things like that. And I, you know, it was a situation where those friends, their parents knew about it.
Yeah.
So it's hard to imagine that this individual's that someone wasn't aware, whether it was his friends or his family.
But what a huge gap there is between swords and a Nazi uniform and all those firearms. That, I mean, that's...
But it's a crazy 16-year-old kid who probably thinks it's cool to have a Nazi uniform, too, you know?
I guess.
Well, that's, you know, again, that's where the parents come in. You have to explain that's not cool. That's
right.
Not okay. You know, that represents hate, and you shouldn't have anything. And then threatening, you know, writing, intimidating, trying to intimidate someone using social media. That is not okay. That's, you know, that's where everyone involved, the entire community, has to make sure that the kid, you know, knows that's a problem. And obviously, if you have, you know... You don't have a gas mask for hobby, right? Like
right.
That's, you know, and knives and explosives. You know, it's unlikely that this was something he was using on the weekend to go in the backwoods and play with. This was someone, you know, who apparently wanted to do some harm. And, you know, that is something that immediately should raise a red flag with anyone involved. Obviously, other people had to have known.
I want to commend the student who turned this individual in, because high school is a really awkward and uncomfortable time. And, you know, sometimes you're thinking, I don't want to tell anybody. I don't want to rat someone out. Right. I don't want to get in trouble myself. But thankfully, this student, and this was the particular student who was threatened, who brought it forward to the authorities.
Yeah, well, authorities are not saying exactly who brought it forward, but it would seem that it was the person who was threatened, Wendy and Bill. When you talk to the students there at Hinsdale, again, you know, really nice school out there in the northwest suburbs. Once they heard about this, you know, they were very concerned. I talked to a couple students yesterday who said they were out on a field trip. And when they heard, they were worried about, you know, their peers who were back at the school, worried that potentially something could happen there. Yes, you're absolutely right, Wendy, that young man should be, or young man or woman should be commended for coming forward. It's a difficult thing to do. You may be afraid in a situation like that where someone's making a threat against you, but it's a reminder that threats and things that you say, postings, have to be taken seriously. And obviously, if a young man has an arsenal as well, that has to be taken seriously.
But isn't it interesting, in a day and age where we keep hearing, if you see something, say something, a mere threat isn't really enough. Even if you say, hey, there's a kid in my class, he's always wearing a Nazi uniform, he's got a Nazi uniform, that's not enough. The problem is having that arsenal of weapons. That's where the problem begins.
Yeah, but you wouldn't have known that.
That's what I mean. Without that say something, see something, say something, it A leads to B, leads to C. So it ends up paying off.
That's right, Bill. And as we learn more, I mean, perhaps the suspect's parents deserve some credit. Remember, the law enforcement would have had to obtain the search warrant, but evidently they cooperated and did allow the search to take place. No, you're absolutely right. Look, you know, a Nazi uniform is free speech. There are certain things you can say back and forth on social media to people that it may or may not be construed as a threat. So that gets very tricky. But obviously. It's very important that the community follows up, if there is a potential threat and gets involved and asks hard questions, because, there were always warning signs. Whenever we see these mass shootings and incidents of violence across our country, there was always, oh, wow, yeah, so-and-so wore black all the time, or so-and-so was looking at strange websites online. There are always clues, and so it's important, as you said, that people speak up. If you see something, say something.
And, who knows? We're not in the parents' boat. Maybe they were well aware of this, and he's a 16-year-old kid who's not listening to his parents to get rid of it. We don't know that side of it either. But I'm just glad that the see something, say something happened before something did happen. It's sad that you want to go back to having false reports of killer, crazy clowns out there, because that's actually better than something like this.
That's a lot better. Maybe the clowns don't have an arsenal. This guy had the firepower to be able to do some damage, yeah.
Well, thank you very much for talking with us. Tamon Bradley, WGN-TV news reporter. We can catch you, 4 to 6 and then again at 9?
You got it, Bill and Wendy.
Thanks so much, Tamon. Have a great weekend.
Okay, you too.
All right, that's Tamon Bradley, as we said, from Channel 9 News.
What? The parents gave in right away and said, yeah, maybe they need help.
Yeah. Yeah.
There really are two sides to every story, but it's still scary. It's scary that it hits close to our neighborhood where we live, but this could happen at any other school. So really, I'd like to commend that student who, whether they told their parents or school officials, it definitely was handled before it could have gotten out of control.
Let's take a break, and then I want to extend this a little further. There was an incident at the University of Colorado in Boulder yesterday that has some ties to Chicago, and I'll explain that next. Stick around. It's Bill and it's Wendy on WGN.
All right. You have more scary news in this big world?
My daughter Kylie was explaining, not to me but to my wife, I wasn't home yet from work. One of her best friends goes to the University of Colorado in Boulder, and there was an incident yesterday where somebody was shot. They had a machete, and they were shot and killed by police. I'll read you the story. I got the story right here. But the story itself is frightening, but then I'll tell you what was going on at the university while this was happening and as an aftermath, and that's even scarier. Listen to this. Two police officers shot and killed a machete-wielding suspect inside the Champion Center at the University of Colorado's Folsom Field on Wednesday morning. A move that police said was in the best interest of the campus after the man refused to drop his machete. Following altercation outside, the suspect, who has not yet been identified publicly, this is a story that ran last night. I think they have identified him this morning, I think, followed a patient into the sports medicine facility, campus police said at an afternoon news conference. A source close to the investigation told the Daily Camera that the suspect was a white male in his early 20s who appeared to be a religious zealot of some kind and who had been overheard talking about looking for sinners. Again, keep in mind he's carrying a machete during this.
A recently discharged Marine, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's I didn't know the suspect.
Part. Didn't know that part.
Just in.
He has been tentatively identified as you just pointed out, I'm sorry, a recently discharged U.S. Marine. Source said that the suspect approached a woman who was sitting in a car in the parking lot outside the Champion Center and wrote a message referring to the Ten Commandments on the vehicle. Now, again, this ended with his death. They shot him inside their football facility at the University of Colorado in Boulder. My daughter told the story about one of her friends who's attending school there who was in a class while this was happening, but you knew something was happening on campus because you heard an array of sirens and a lot of commotion outside as they were trying to figure out exactly who this guy was, what his intentions were, and then finally trying to apprehend him and ending up shooting him and killing him. So she is getting texts, alerts. She's in class. This is my daughter's friend who goes to school there. She's getting alerts, and they're completely conflicting. Some of them saying there's an incident there on the school grounds. Wherever you are, you need to get out of your classroom and head for the streets. Don't stay where you are. It's not safe where you are. Go elsewhere, which is what my daughter's friend decided to do since the alert said that. Moments later, they got another one saying, wherever you are on campus, stay where you are. Don't go out into the streets. Almost the complete opposite. They found out later that somebody on campus was able to kind of supersede the texts. They could kind of jump the system and send out pretty much anything they wanted, which is so frightening.
Who does that? Like somebody, and obviously this guy who had the machete, someone's not in cahoots with him,
right.
But what if it was somebody?
Right. That's what I'm saying, is if somebody, if you have an alert system like that that's so easy to break into, it not only defeats the purpose of having an alert system, it makes it all dangerous. Her friend sent a text to her parents because she was panicking because they hear all these sirens, they know there's an incident on campus, they're all running around madly. She just sends a text just saying simply, I love you, and it ends there. And her parents don't know exactly what that means or why that's happening. If they were following the news yesterday, they knew there was something going on campus, but to what extent, they didn't know. And then you just get a simple text like that, and that's the end of it. So they're panicking. But it's really scary to think that somebody has the ability to override an alert system like that on a campus.
That's really frightening. And I know that schools have this ability now. Just when my high schooler went to Ireland, there was an app that you could get where you get all the texts that the teachers are sending. So a university has to have something. Plus, they have a Twitter account. As this happened October 5th, CU alert, armed man with machete is in the Champion Center. Take appropriate protective action. That was an alert that went out to the kids. So obviously you would know to avoid the Champion Center.
Right, right.
But then the conflicting reports, I mean,
do I stay? Do I run? I'm getting one text that says one thing. I'm getting another text that says another thing, just minutes apart.
Well, we should get a hold of the university and see if
what they know about this.
Yeah, because this is a major issue.
Yeah, it is. It's terrible.
Because, you know, what if somebody says, meet me in the Champion Center or whatever?
And they're involved in this in some way. Yeah, it's already a terrible thing of what happened there, but it could have been magnified so much more if that were the case.
And now look at this, too, because the CU Boulder alert that came out 24 hours ago, unconfirmed reports of active harmer at the UMC, avoid area, take appropriate protective action. And then an hour after that, it says CU alert, all clear at UMC, 911 calls on report of active shooter at UMC believed to be a hoax.
Oh.
Avoid area. So we should get someone on from that
to know what's what.
University, because if someone hacked into that, that's what students, that's their only lifeline.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that's why it's so disturbing. All right, let's do this. We'll take a break. We've got news next. Kim has the news, and then there's more show ahead. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
It's Bill. It's Wendy. Kim, thank you very much. I have to tell you, I miss our little Kevin Richter, who's on his honeymoon.
Yeah, sure.
And Elif is filling in today, and we have tainted her.
Why do you say that?
Because Elif is a competent, smart young woman who
a mismatch for the show, by the way.
Well, that's what I mean, but you have corrupted her.
I hope that's not true.
She is now being sarcastic and goofing around.
You're noticing that, too?
We've ruined you, Elif.
How many days did it take?
It took 2 days.
Oh, man.
The first day, she was on her best behavior, but then I noticed starting yesterday and certainly into today, she's become kind of like the rest of us here on the show.
Intolerable.
Yep. That's the word.
Just joking.
That's the word. No.
No, it's so funny because when we, the first few times we worked with Elif, you would say something to her and mm-hmm. It would be some outrageous request and she would look at you and like, I could see the wheels turning like, okay, how am I going to make that happen?
If a story came up on the show, if a name came up with somebody, I would say to her, Elif, try to get Warren G. Harding for the show. We'd love to talk to him, even though he's been dead for many, many years.
But you could tell that she was trying, okay, what's the best route to go to make this happen?
Yeah.
That lasted maybe the first day or so that she worked with
right.
us. Then you would say something, and even if you meant something legitimate,
right.
she would look at you like a babysitter looks at a toddler going, sure. yeah, right.
Yeah, there was that.
And now the sarcasm
now
has built.
Now she's just playing along.
We've completely ruined you.
What does that say about my character, then?
You cave too easily.
No, she
no?
adjusts. She's a chameleon.
Oh,
she switches
yeah.
to fit with
yeah.
either,
her surroundings?
Yes.
I'm yeah. the chameleon. You guys are the comedians.
Oh, well, thank you, Elif. That's very nice of you. That's so nice.
Well, sorry, by the way.
Why?
This
no,
is
I love
the new
it.
Her.
All right.
All right.
Boy.
You're familiar, I'm sure, with the ad campaign that Kentucky Fried Chicken has been using for, I think, 2 or 3 years now, where they keep getting, actually, it can't be that long. It's got to be a little shorter than that. Let's say a year and a half. They keep getting guys to play the role of Colonel Harlan Sanders, the originator of Colonel Sanders.
Elif, can you book him for the show?
Can you get us Colonel Harlan Sanders? All right. So, I think the first one was Daryl Hammond.
Yes.
And then...
And I thought he was great.
He was great, but here's the problem. They didn't inform him properly that their game plan all along was to get a guy to be the colonel for a couple of months and then get a new guy.
Alec Baldwin?
It's not been Alec Baldwin yet. That wouldn't be bad. But so they get a guy, he's the colonel for 2 or 3 months, then they get another guy, then they get another guy.
Was Norm MacDonald?
Yeah. He was for a bit.
We go back a long way with Daryl Hammond, and it was like, wow, he's really good as Colonel Sanders.
Right.
But then I'm very fickle because then when I saw Norm MacDonald, I'm like, oh, Norm's a better Colonel Sanders.
Yeah.
Then Jim Gaffigan has done it.
Right.
He's pretty good.
He's very good. George Hamilton is the extra crispy Colonel Sanders because he's selling their extra crispy recipe. And he is, because of his exposure to the sun.
Is that hysterical?
A little crispy.
I never saw that one.
Yeah, there's a couple of those.
God, that's funny.
And now they're already using Rob Riggle, formerly of Saturday Night Live, and he's been in a bunch of movies. He is the current Colonel Sanders, but he won't be for long because they just keep bringing in new guys.
I want to get you that gig.
I would love to be.
You would be very good.
There's one of the commercials that showed their boardroom at KFC. And they've got on the wall, it says future Colonel Sanders, and there's a bunch of guys, including Tim Meadows from Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm trying to remember who else was on there. There were like 5 or 6 pictures up on the wall of other guys. Well, this is doing incredible business for KFC, but in a strange way. They're talking about how they just released yesterday their market report, KFC did. And they say that same-store sales have increased 6% compared to the same quarter last year. It's a growth of 8% compared to the same quarter of 2014. And I know those numbers don't seem that dramatic, but in the fast food business, it's very dramatic. 6 to 8% that's a thrilling number.
And considering there are a lot of chicken places.
Right.
You can make your choice to go anywhere.
Right. The CEO of Yum Brands, that is the owner, the parent company owner, says that I wouldn't say that it was an abrupt change. He's talking about their sales in conjunction with these new commercials that they've been doing for the last year and a half or 2 years. But here's the interesting part. This is the part that I love, and it really shows you how statistics are weird and advertising is crazy. He says, the CEO says, so far the response has been 80% positive. That's not bad. But 20% of the people hate it. But he says, I'm actually quite happy that 20% hate it because now they at least have an opinion. They're actually talking about KFC. So in the world of advertising, even if you're presenting something that one out of five people hate, not just dislike, but straight out hate. I hate the fact that every time there's a Kentucky Fried commercial on, it's a different guy. But what it says to them is people are paying attention. They're connecting to the fact that it's a Kentucky Fried Chicken commercial.
Does that make you go buy it, though?
That's what I can't figure out. If you were watching a commercial for something and you hated it, would you go, I hate this. This makes me sick. I got to get some of that. You'd do the opposite, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and I don't understand. I guess I'm a big sucker for advertising like everyone else is. I enjoy the commercials. I think they're funny, but they're not. Like, I'm more apt to go to, and I think Taco Bell is another yum brand.
It is.
They show, like, the good food. That's going to get me to go there
right.
More than a funny kernel. Just seriously. It's like, oh, my God, a quesalupa? I got to go try that, which I don't think is available anymore.
Oh.
I think it was for a limited time.
Right, they used to say that, for a limited time only.
Yeah. Too limited. But if I see the food with the that looks ooey and gooey,
right.
That's going to go, oh, I got to get some Taco Bell.
Right.
But just seeing funny Colonel Sanders, that's not going
to
make me go get KFC. Not really.
Do you remember, all right, so we're going back. I must have been either in my senior year of college or maybe just a little bit ahead, but they were my prime White Castle years. They're when I liked White Castle
my most. You had prime White Castle years?
Yeah. I always enjoy White Castle. But
oh,
now,
it started young at school.
I used to have them in grade school. I told you that.
And the nuns would let you use
their microwave oven in the teacher's lounge.
That is against the Ten Commandments.
It should be.
Thou shalt not let a student named Bill Leff use a microwave to heat up sliders where the whole school smells them.
My mom would give me in my lunch, would give me two or three White Castles, and then I would reason to the teacher that I can't eat them cold. And she'd say, well, the only microwave is in the teacher's lounge. And then a light bulb would go up over both of our heads. And then I was allowed to go into the teacher's lounge and heat up the White Castles. And all the kids were just not. They go, how do you get White Castles every day? But my mom would go in every, you know, second or third day and buy 10 or a dozen of them. It's
a
good
lunch. I can't believe they let that happen. Because, you know,
lunch.
In a Catholic school, you'd want everybody to be equally miserable.
Right. Right.
Bad lunches.
We're having gruel again.
Right.
Except for Billy. He's got White Castle. How did he pull that off?
And other kids were smelling them.
Right. But then, like, I had incredible trading power. Like, kids would have traded me, and they could have brought in anything.
A bike?
I got a mini bike. You want to trade for three White Castles? All right. I'll do that. So
your prime White Castle years.
My prime White Castle years were probably at the end of my college career and then into my early 20s. That's when I really loved White Castles. And they had an ad campaign. Do you remember the Crave Man?
Oh, yeah.
I hated those. The Crave. I'm the Crave Man. It's what I crave.
Yeah.
Shut up. So I just stopped eating White Castles.
Because of that?
Yeah, I couldn't. I'm like, I'm giving them the money, and that's going. Some of that money's going to the Crave Man.
Can I tell you, the things you stand up for sometimes are so.
It's ridiculous.
Whacked.
I know that.
Or is it whack?
It's whack and it's whacked. Whackety whack. Don't smoke crack. That's an ad campaign that I came up with.
That makes me want to smoke crack.
No, I don't
so
want
see?
It to. You should not
Jeez.
Smoke crack. Kids listening, stop smoking crack. But I would always, I loved White Castle, but I kept thinking a portion of this says to the CEO of White Castle, people are loving the Crave Man. We got to keep the Crave Man around.
And that's when you gave it up.
Yeah, I stopped eating them until they got rid of the Crave Man.
Well, so how do you turn this into the KFC story? If people hate it, sales still up.
I can't figure it out, but the CEO is thrilled that 20% of the people hate it just because they're identifying. They're going, if somebody said, hey, what commercial do you hate? They go, well, that KFC thing, because every time I turn it on, it's a different Colonel Sanders, and I'm dizzy.
I like it, and it still doesn't get me to go there.
I do like it. Yeah, I don't know that it's influenced my decision ever. I watch it, and I smile, and I go, hey, that's funny, and then that's the end of it.
Well, it's funny because remember everybody's been talking about these 11 herbs and spices that have been under wraps. It's the Colonel's secret recipe.
Sure.
They actually, in 2008, the Louisville, Kentucky-based company used a Brinks armored truck and briefcase marked top secret when it made a big show of beefing up security at the vault containing Colonel Sanders' handwritten recipe.
Mm.
And then somebody in the family released it.
Yeah, a few weeks ago. I saw it online.
It was in August.
There's no surprises. It's kind of what's in almost every fried chicken recipe. There's really, like, you didn't see anything.
Name one spice.
Marjoram?
No.
There's no marjoram in there? I'm out.
No. There are
butter?
11. No, that's herbs and spices.
I thought they put butter in there.
Oh, my God. See what?
Crispiness? Delicious crispiness? Is that a spice?
It's
all spice?
11 spices.
Paprika.
White flour. Very good.
I got one.
There is white flour, salt,
yeah,
thyme, basil,
yeah,
oregano,
yeah. See, are any of these shocking to you? You know all these were in there.
I didn't think oregano was in there.
No?
Celery salt? Did you think celery salt was in there?
No, I didn't think that was in there.
Black pepper, that you know because you can see it.
Sure.
Dried mustard?
Okay, I would not have guessed that one.
Paprika?
Yeah, I said that one.
Garlic salt? I wouldn't have guessed that.
Mm-hmm.
Ground ginger?
No, that's all right. I'm not shocked by it, but
and
right.
White pepper.
Oh,
so those are the 11 herbs and spices. Why were they so protective of this? Seriously, even if you went home and took these 11 herbs and spices and mixed them together to make your own fried chicken, it's not an easy thing to do.
No, it wouldn't taste the same.
And you'd still go to KFC if you were a fan of KFC,
right?
So.
I know.
It just is crazy.
But Coke is like that with their recipe, too.
It's I'm not going to go home and make Coke, are you?
No. No. Nope.
And I am in love with the Whole Foods Sonoma chicken salad. It has pecans and red grapes and chicken and poppy seeds, and it's really expensive. I think it's $300 for a pound.
No, it's not. No, it isn't.
It's up there. So I went to the Whole Foods website, and they give the exact recipe on how to do it. And the Greek orzo salad. Both of my favorite salads at Whole Foods. They put the recipes right there. I've made them at home.
They're not afraid anyone's going to be competition to them, that the competition's not going to come
by. What am I going to open up my own little...
I don't think you are, but I wonder if somebody's like right on the edge going, I need an idea for some sort of a food service. What could I do? And then they see that.
Really? That's what they're going to do? They're going to go online and get
these... I'm going to hire the Crave Man. I know he's out of work. He'll be my spokesperson.
And one of the new colonels.
Right. Any of the old retired Colonel Sanders.
I just make my own. And I'll tell you, it's easier to just go buy it. And I went and bought some last night.
Probably less expensive, too.
No, it's less expensive to make.
Oh, is it? Yeah.
Definitely. Because you can make a big bowl of it.
I guess you could, yeah.
But it's a lot of work.
Yeah, it's better to just go and buy it.
I know. It's not going to make them go out of business. So what do we care that the 11 herbs and spices are out there?
All right. Everybody wants to talk to us about this, and we welcome your calls and your texts at 312-981-7200. We'll take those calls and texts in just a minute. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. In May of 2015, so roughly a year and a half ago, almost a year and a half ago, KFC came up with a new ad campaign. Here's how it worked. They kept getting different guys, different comedic actors, starting with Daryl Hammond, to play the iconic Colonel Sanders. Remember it was Edward G. Robinson for a while?
It should have been.
11 Herbs and Spices, see? So it was Daryl Hammond. It was Edward G. Robinson. It was Norm MacDonald, Jim Gaffigan, George Hamilton, and now Rob Riggle. The response has been mostly good, but 20% of the viewers say they hate it. Not just dislike it, but they hate it. The CEO of KFC, the KFC CEO, is thrilled with this. He's so happy because it means that people are paying attention. They have an opinion. He likes that.
All right. Well, I don't know what makes it work, but Michael, you have a comment on this?
Well, yeah, I think I know why the CEO is happy with 20% of the people being angry is because instead of being indifferent and not talking about it, they're angry and they're having conversations with other people who may not be angry or indifferent. And so they're the ones that are going to possibly go out and get chicken because the angry people are not going to go get the chicken.
Right.
The other people may just switch over and give it a try.
That makes sense.
It
that
does
makes
make
perfect sense.
Sense.
Yep.
Well, thanks for solving the problem, Michael. We appreciate it. And the 11 herbs and spices to be mixed with 2 cups white flour, salt, thyme, basil, oregano, celery salt, black pepper, dried mustard, paprika, garlic salt, ground ginger, and white pepper.
Mm-hmm. That's your KFC recipe.
I feel kind of guilty, but I mean, it's right on the internet.
You're
going
to go to jail, I bet.
Chicken jail?
Yeah, you'll go to chicken jail.
That would be my last meal. I would. Don't you love fried chicken?
I enjoy some fried chicken. Sure, who doesn't?
Scott, you tried to make this recipe with all these 11 herbs and spices?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I made it about 2 weeks ago, and I have to tell you, and I cook, but do not do this recipe. Actually, there's a discrepancy, and I think it came down to tablespoons and teaspoons in the recipe. It absolutely was a complete failure. And a lot of the reason is before people invest all this money in the chicken and the spices, when KFC prepares their chicken, they do it in a pressure cooker.
Oh, yeah.
Which means that you're going to get a more tender, juicy chicken. If you follow those instructions and that recipe, that chicken comes out like a bowling ball by the time you're done. You cannot cook it. You cannot cook it for that long and get a tender piece of chicken, and it comes out bright, dark red. There's way too much paprika in the recipe.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It was definitely a miss, and I guess the test kitchen of the Tribune did it.
Yes.
And they said it came out fine. I don't buy it.
Maybe they had a pressure cooker.
I don't think they did, though.
I don't know anyone with a pressure. Do you know anyone with a pressure
just
cooker?
Just terrorists.
Yeah, I guess.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
and it's sort of like roasted chicken, and that's how you do roasted chicken in a pressure cooker. So I think if you really want to follow that recipe, you need to do it the way they prepare it, in the store. And I think the best jingle for KFC, I don't know if you remember it, but it was the one written by Barry Manilow, which, get a bucket of chicken out of a barrel of fun.
Sure.
That was
goodbye, ho-hum.
Goodbye, ho-hum.
Yeah, that was very effective, sure. Wow, good memory. Thank you, Scott.
All right, guys, no worries.
Do you remember before they went to this alternating Colonel, there was an animated Colonel Sanders that they used for about a year or two? Do you remember who that was?
Jim Backus.
No, it was not Jim Backus. It was Randy Quaid.
Oh,
was the
you're
animated
right.
Colonel Sanders. And before that, they just had a guy who, the real Colonel Sanders died, I think, in the late 1970s or early 1980s. So then, of course, when he died, they stopped using him. And then they waited about 8 or 10 years, and then they just brought him back, which was very disconcerting if you knew he died, because you go, wait a minute, this chicken's so good, Colonel Sanders came back from the dead to tell us how delicious it is.
That is good chicken.
that's got to be good chicken.
So there was the Barry Manilow, but there was also I Like My Chicken Finger Licking
Good. Oh, right.
Good.
Yeah. That works.
KFC's been around a long
forever.
Time. With 11 herbs and spices.
Yep. I bet
I
you get the
be
job.
The next one.
You're going to get the job. We'll take a quick break. Ro and Anna will be in to tell us what they have coming up next. Stay here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I guess that dead air would be sponsored by Rokan and Anna DeBontis.
Proudly sponsored by them and their show. Hi, guys. How are you? Everything good?
Thanks. Couldn't be better.
I've noticed that of the two of you, only one of you is here.
Yes, that is correct.
I did the quick math.
Here she comes.
All right.
I see
you
her.
Full
right.
credit. Anna gets full credit for today's show.
You know what? She was out. She's out getting the coffee, and which is very important for today's program, and trust me. But I'm like Trump, trust me, it's going to be very important, okay? We have the Trump and Clinton chia heads.
All right, mm-hmm. Can you hold your thought?
Hold your thought for just a second, because this needs to be said, and it needs to be said now. This
right.
is a bulletin that just came in.
Yeah.
MyPillow has helped over 25 million people get the best sleep of their lives. It's guaranteed to be the most comfortable pillow that you will ever own. MyPillow is the perfect pillow for you. Whether you like more of a firm pillow or a fluffy
yes.
pillow, doesn't
yes.
matter. Doesn't matter. They're both great. MyPillow has multiple sizes. They come with 11 herbs and spices. That's a new feature. Their interlocking fill is designed to conform to your preferred sleeping position. They even have a 10-year will-not-go-flat warranty. MyPillow is non-allergenic. It's machine washable. Proudly made right here in the USA. And they just brought back the best offer they've ever had. Right now, you get 4 MyPillows, all for the price of just one. When you buy one premium MyPillow, you get another one free. And then you get 2 Anywhere Pillows absolutely free, which is even better than free.
Go to MyPillow.com, use the promo code WGN. They have a 60-night money-back guarantee. You sleep on it, and if you don't love it, return it, and you get your money back. Call 800-299-9579 or visit MyPillow.com. Again, 800-299-9579. Don't forget, use the promo code WGN, as you were saying.
You know, that was so scintillating. I don't know. I pretty much forgot what I was going to say.
You really do need four My Pillows, by the way.
Because, yeah,
you know,
one's
husbands
not enough.
Steal your pillows at night. I don't know if anybody has the, you know, has anybody they sleep with that takes their pillows from them. So we
have
two
different sizes. And I get really mad. I have a white one. Jim has a green one.
See, that's important.
Oh, so you know.
Yeah.
And it's decorative at St. Patrick's Day.
That's or the Valentine's one day. Day.
Yes, but the green and white.
Hide
I'd say,
the green.
Not to be beaten.
Don't touch my white pillow. Yep.
You know,
it all works.
That's how white pillows matter. Yep. All right, let me say this. We have, you know who's going to be on the show today?
Who's going to be on the show
Bob
today?
Bob Costas is going to join us.
Love him.
Oh.
Isn't that cool?
Yep, we're going to get ready for the Cubs.
Post-season.
Triumphant postseason. I'm just
so excited.
I'm trying to be very positive about this, although I'm scared poopless.
Don't be.
It'll
be all right. Do you remember there was a time where Bob Costas was in heavy contention to be one of the Cubs announcers?
He would have been
remember
great.
That. Yeah. I know. You know, but there was an issue though because he was working for NBC at the time, and yeah. He did have an out. It is said in his contract that would have allowed him to do that,
right?
But he couldn't have done all the games. But then again, Harry wasn't doing all the games either, was he?
Not at
Let's
the
be
end.
Let's be honest.
No.
So,
but didn't he grow up a Cardinals fan?
Yeah,
sort of a St. Louis guy.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. Didn't he do some Cardinals games for a little while?
I think he did. I think for radio and Jack Buck was his yeah. hero. You know, the great St. Louis broadcaster.
Yeah.
And so of course Jack Buck of course is the father of Billy Buck.
Yes.
And
Joe Buck from Midnight Cowboy.
Oh, and Joe Buck from Midnight Cowboy, right.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting. He says, although you must acknowledge this, he does say that June 22nd, 1984 game,
mm-hmm.
that game where Ryan Sandberg had three home runs and Bobby Dernier and all those guys. It was
yeah.
just a crazy extra inning game. Was the greatest baseball game he ever called.
Wow. That says a lot.
Against the Cubs and the
Cardinals.
So it's going to be fun.
Didn't Sandberg hit the last one off of Bruce Sutter to win it, I think? Does that
he
sound right?
May have.
Yeah.
He may have.
It was an amazing game.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm all I want to say is that I'm cautiously optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
Cautious.
That's a good way to be.
Cautious.
I'm very optimistic about it.
Good luck,
feels
Cubs
good.
Fans.
Thank-
yes.
Oh. Are you really?
No,
you
I'm not. I mean it sincerely.
Well,
there was
very
no spite
genuine
behind that.
2005. Yeah. It's come on, do it. It's time.
Yeah.
You
okay.
don't do it now. It's never going to happen.
Did you go through this last night?
We won it in 08.
I wanted the Giants to win. I thought the Giants would be a better opponent, that we had a better chance against them. But then as soon as the game was over, I went, not should have been the Mets. Like the second,
I
the second it was over.
I'm like, now who do we want here? Wait, I guess yeah. the Giants. No, no,
oh,
no, the Mets. No.
Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh, the Giants look strong at the end. You're like, no,
yeah.
you don't want that.
Absolutely, absolutely true. It's like, no. No matter what the outcome was going to be, I want the other guy.
Yeah.
Well, it's nerve-wracking, yeah. isn't it?
Well, you want the guy who lost, right?
I
but we don't get it that
for
way.
I him like crazy, and as soon as he swung at the ball, I went, no, Mets, I want the Mets. I did this wrong.
Which shows you that you have no power over it.
I
so
know.
Just let it happen, people, and if
Enjoy
it's meant
it.
To happen, it will.
Oh, you're,
good
oh,
advice.
Yeah, okay, you say that in Hawks season? I don't think so.
That's different.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
That's faster paced. It takes more reaction.
I'm really glad, though, the White Sox got to Rick Renteria. He was very helpful to the Cubs. You know, they say that, you know, that tells you about the tacit racism in sports. I'm doing that 60 Minute Sports thing on Showtime or HBO, whatever it's on. They always say about Rick Renteria, you know, you need him because he's really good with these Spanish players. First
right.
of all, there are no Spanish players,
yeah, right.
A. And the Spanish language players, he'd know better with them than he is with anybody else.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I know. It's weird that they sold that as one of the big points that they chose him based on, but
yeah.
I don't know.
I know. It's goofy. Hey, you guys got to go.
All right,
you guys are done.